tomorrow's news today.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Sitting in for Alex Jones today, we have a jam-packed show for you. I'll be joined by Zachary Rell in the next hour to talk about the pardons and the full-fledged freedom of the J6 defendants. One of two victories of the Trump administration so far. And I'll tell you, you can never take it away from him. You can never take away from Trump the fact that he did pardon the January Sixers as he promised. And for that reason alone, if I could go back in time, I'd still vote for him, even with the Iran war, even with all of the other disappointments. But we'll be getting into that and whether or not this whole administration can be turned around and whether America has a future or not. There is some good news here, and I think we'll start the show today with just a series of, not tweets, truths. Truth social posts from President Donald Trump. I think I have them in order here. We'll just go through his morning of posting. He began bright and early at 7:12 a.m. saying, it's easy. Tucker is a real low IQ person, always easy to beat and highly overrated. So are Megyn Kelly, Candace, parentheses, really dumb and mentally ill, and bankrupt Alex Jones, who's completely, quote-unquote, fried. There are others also. Then we have some that are very good, true MAGA all the way and smart. I should do a list of good, bad, and somewhere in the middle. Wouldn't that be fascinating? President DJT. Now, I think we know you don't need to do a list. The people you think are good and powerful and smart are Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro, and the people that you think are low IQ are the people that disagree with you. It's not all that complicated. Actually, I think we figured it out. Now, I want to remind you, if you are a low IQ individual, you can always advertise the fact by going to thealexjonesstore.com, getting one of these stylish low IQ hats, just so people can know that they need to be patient with you, okay? You are not sophisticated enough or intelligent enough to understand the highly complicated and nuanced view of Donald Trump, that people who insult him bad, people who flatter him good. It's you got to be really low IQ not to understand that. You can get that at thealexjonesstore.com. There's a whole line of merchandise. Okay, so he starts off insulting a bunch of people who were his biggest supporters. And we'll touch on that again. People have got a bit of a misconception about what's going on with people leaving Trump, why this might be. But then he's got the big news here at 8:06 a.m. Iran has just announced that the Strait of Iran is fully open and ready for full passage. Thank you. I think he means the Strait of Hormuz, but yes, we get the point. Okay, so it's open. It's ready for all passage. That's amazing. He says, in all caps, the Strait of Hormuz is completely open and ready for business and full passage, but the naval blockade will remain in full force and effect as it pertains to Iran only until such time as our transaction with Iran is 100% complete. This process should go very quickly in that most of the points are already negotiated. Thank you for your attention in this matter, President Donald J. Trump. Okay, so maybe a lot can happen in 21 minutes, but all right. It's fully open. It's ready for passage. Also, it is closed and will remain closed until we get everything that we want. And we've gotten everything that we want, but it has to be finalized. But it basically is finalized. So the strait is open, except that it's closed. And the war is over, but there's still a lot more war to go. The U.S. will get all nuclear, quote-unquote, dust created by our great B-2 bombers. What? The USA will get all nuclear dust created by our great B-2 bombers. No money will exchange hands in any way, shape, or form. This deal is in no way subject to Lebanon either, but the U.S. will separately work with Lebanon and deal with the Hezbollah situation in an appropriate manner. Israel will not be bombing Lebanon any longer. They are, all caps, prohibited from doing so by the USA. Enough is enough. Thank you, President Donald J. Trump. Oh, so Joe Kent was right. So I guess what you're saying is Joe Kent was right all along. Is that what you're saying, Trump? That's what I heard.
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade. It takes 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. It doesn't work? Tell me. Here it is, brother.
He's yours.
Looks just like the stuff from Doom, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now. TheAlexShowStore.com.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
All right, welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. I'll be joined by Zach Rell in the next hour. We'll be talking about the January 6th pardons. The full-fledged freedom of the January Sixers has now been achieved. Very good news. But of course, we're starting with the series of announcements from Donald Trump today and sort of what to make of them. Supposedly there's been a ceasefire deal. There has been at least 10-day pause, but Trump did something unique. Out of all these messages that we have, he's railing again about Tucker Carlson and Alex Jones. He's saying the strait is open, but also that it's closed. But I think the most important thing in all of these posts are this last line about Israel, saying that Israel is all caps prohibited from doing so by the USA. They are now prohibited from bombing Lebanon. Enough is enough. Thank you, President DJT. So if this is accurate, if this is really what's happening, I again have my doubts because we've pointed out Donald Trump doesn't often make these hardcore, no nuance statements. Usually everything from Trump is, we'll see, we're negotiating that, could be this, could be that. He doesn't like to sort of, you know, firmly set down what he believes because it can be awkward if it's proven wrong. But in multiple cases, he has said very strident and absolute statements about Israel that have not come to pass. For example, we've played the video quite a bit on the War Room of Donald Trump saying, in no uncertain terms, there will be no West Bank settlements. They will not be annexing the West Bank. Enough. We're putting a stop to it. And since then, there has been basically a continuous, massive expansion of West Bank settlements, total abject terrorism in those places. They are annexing huge parts of the West Bank. So Trump is often humiliated in this way by Israel. I don't like it. I don't like seeing Trump humiliated because he's supposed to represent America. And I would think that when America says something in an absolute way, that Israel would be forced to adhere to that. But obviously they don't feel the need to bend themselves to our will. They feel quite confident in their ability to bend our will to theirs. So here again, he says, Israel will not be bombing Lebanon any longer. They are prohibited from doing so by the U.S. Enough is enough. What does that actually mean? Does that mean that if Israel bombs Lebanon, we'll go to war with Israel? Almost certainly not. So what is there to stop Israel from continuing to bomb Lebanon? Nothing, basically. Basically, the agreement of Israel that I guess they've agreed to stop bombing Lebanon. Are they even going to stop? I mean, I don't see the mechanism by which, you know, that we have to stop Israel from doing this. I guess we're betting it all on their patience and goodwill. So we'll see how that goes. Again, I don't really know what to make of this because so much that has come out of the Trump administration about this war, like this is the problem, right? It's the boy who cried wolf. It's just the actual natural and appropriate response to being lied to over and over as you stop trusting the people doing it. So, you know, it's Friday. Usually Friday afternoons are when Trump likes to launch a big sneak attack. I think it'd be a little bit too on the nose to do right now to announce a ceasefire in the morning and then break into the afternoon. That might be a bridge too far for the current administration. But I also wouldn't put it past them. And we can look at the so-called agreement. We can look at what people are saying. But we can also look at what is actually happening around the world. And obviously, war is still very much in the future with no sign of stopping. We are moving huge amounts of personnel into the Middle East. We're moving huge amounts of equipment into the Middle East for a reason, right? We're closing down our Syrian bases and moving our personnel that was in those bases to forward positions near Iran for a reason, right? We'll see. But Trump says more. He says, now that the Strait of Hormuz situation is open, I receive a call from NATO asking if we would need some help. I told them to stay away unless they just want to load up their ships with oil. They were useless when needed, a paper tiger, President DJT. And again, we'll get into this a little bit more because a bunch of European leaders just held like a 40-nation emergency summit to deal with the Strait of Hormuz. And it's just, it's this, you kind of have to separate yourself and like look at this in a bird's eye view and remind yourselves of like how this got started and why we're in this situation. Because on the face of it, it seems like what's happening is that Europe is trying to deal with this action by Iran and trying to figure out how to contend with this Iranian action. But it was America that started the war. It was America that sort of forced Iran's hand. They hadn't closed the Hormuz Strait until we launched the attack that we did. It doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. Or maybe they're saving Israel for last, like QAnon says. That could be it. That could very well be. So Trump says, Iran has agreed to never close the Strait of Hormuz again. It will no longer be used as a weapon against the world, President Donald J. Trump. Ever again, never again. They promised, they crossed their heart, and they hope to die. They made a pinky promise with Donald Trump. So that's that. There's nothing, you know, physically stopping them from shutting the Strait of Hormuz at any moment. But they promised they won't. Right. He says, a great and brilliant day for the world, DJT. Yeah, nuts. Hey, whatever stops you from waging the war that you started and you've been perpetuating for the last six weeks, whatever it is, yeah, it's a great day. It's a great day for you to just do what you should have done a week in. Are we supposed to celebrate this? Again, it's like you were the ones who were doing it. Why is this being celebrated like a great thing? You are the ones who are keeping it going. So you can't act like this is a victory. And it's clearly not a victory because it's clearly not America and Israel that are setting the terms for this discussion. And if they wanted, Iran could disagree with this. Or if Israel keeps bombing Lebanon, the whole thing will fall to nothing. And no matter what, I have the distinct feeling that this war is just going to start up again. Maybe in 2 weeks, maybe in 6 months. Maybe they've looked at the numbers and thought, gee, if we really want to get this done, it is actually best to pump the brakes a little bit, allow ourselves to rebuild some of the stuff we've lost over the last couple of months of conflict and then start it up again after the midterms. Yeah, maybe that's the calculation going on. There's a lot of reshuffling happening at the highest levels, and we'll get into some of the behind-the-scenes conflicts going on. Okay, but Trump is celebrating his defeat against Iran. Thank you to Pakistan and its great Prime Minister and Field Marshal, two fantastic people. Again, this deal is not tied in any way to Lebanon, but we will make Lebanon great again. So, like, what are you even supposed to make about this? Like, can an adult tell us what's going on? Again, I don't, you know, what are we supposed to do with this? What are we supposed to do with this? He literally is like, sends this long tweet at 8:57 a.m. talking about how they're going to work with Lebanon and deal with the Hezbollah situation in an appropriate manner. Israel will not be bombing Lebanon any longer. They're prohibited from doing so. And then like an hour later, He's like, actually, this deal hasn't anything to do with Lebanon. It's got nothing to do with Lebanon. It's totally separate and distinct. So it sounds like there he's kind of like hedging his statements, where he's going, you know, Israel will not bomb Lebanon. But if they do, that's fine, because that's not a part of this agreement. The deal still has to hold, even though they're bombing Lebanon, which would violate the agreement. But they won't do that because I told them not to. But if they do, it's fine. What are we supposed to make of this? Is it a part of the agreement or not? Because Iran has said it has to be part of the agreement, and they're the ones dictating terms. Yeah, Joe Kent responds, it appears that a historic deal is within reach and will hold if President Trump is willing to enforce the restrictions he's placed on Israel. This post indicates a good start, but it must be followed by actually limiting U.S. military aid to Israel. And yeah, I mean, again, it's kind of frustrating, because you know that the people that were in favor of this war and championing this war and calling you a panican for opposing this war are going to treat this like it's a victory, like it somehow proves us wrong. We are still in a worse position we were before the war started. Even if the Strait of Hormuz opens, which still seems kind of up in the air, it was open before the war started. Nothing has actually benefited any of us, and I've got stories today that already the damage done to energy infrastructure is going to take at least 2 years to get back on track. And that doesn't even count the possibility of empty harvests next year in places like Australia, because they can't get the fertilizer they need to plant this year, or you know, next season, whatever it is. He says, again, this deal is not tied in any way to Lebanon. Iran, with the help of USA, has removed or is removing all sea mines. Thank you to Saudi Arabia, UAE, and Qatar for your great bravery and help, President Donald J. Trump. And he goes on to say, the failing New York Times, fake news CNN, and others just don't know what to do. They're desperately looking for a reason to criticize President Donald J. Trump on the Iran situation, but just can't find it. Why don't they say at the right time, job well done, Mr. President, and start to gain back their credibility? What did you achieve? Honestly, what did you achieve? We'll look into the ceasefire details, but it's just crazy, man. I just don't even know what to make of it at this point. It's just a total false reality that he's desperate to project on everybody. That was another one I didn't even see. That was from yesterday. Who's dumber, Tucker Carlson or Joe Kent? It's very interesting. I met Joe Kent at Dover Air Force Base, along with numerous others who lost their loved ones in war. Said hello to all the families. Yeah, but he was right. So if you'd listened to him early on, we wouldn't have gone through 4 weeks of disaster. We wouldn't have lost American lives. We wouldn't be in this situation at all. We could have focused on domestic issues. You wouldn't have cratered in the polls. You wouldn't have had a bunch of people turn against you for your obviously ill-advised actions, and then you wouldn't have had to flip out and try to defend yourself against them, further severing yourself from a gigantic and influential, you know, base of supporters. You should have probably listened to Joe Kent. You should probably bring him back. You should probably apologize to him. Say, gee, Joe, you're right. Turns out you were right. Turns out the only way out of this is to restrict Israel's actions, where we don't have the same interests as Israel. And getting into this Iran conflict has not turned out to our benefit. It's been basically a complete and total disaster, endlessly on every front. Now, that's not going to happen, obviously, even though it should. He's going to continue to berate and mock and, again, just try in really a ill-advised and petulant way to get back at Joe Kent for being correct. I just put a new video in there. This is another statement he's made about Joe Kent, and we can let's go to clip 27 here. This is Trump on Joe Kent, who, again, I just want to remind you, I mean, his big point, Joe Kent's big point, was that Israel got us into this war. Israel pressured us into this. It was not for American interest. That's been acknowledged by everybody. He was literally just repeating what the Secretary of State and the Speaker of the House and President Trump himself, and just literally everybody, the stories that came out afterwards, just everybody. Everybody knows now Israel absolutely pressured Trump to get into the war in Iran, presented him with the promise that it would be a quick and easy mission, lied to him about that, said they were going to attack anyway, so sort of blackmailing Trump into doing it. And the whole time, Joe Kent was saying, this isn't in our interest. We should not be doing what Israel wants just because Israel wants it. And if we want peace in the region, the one thing we have to do is restrain Israel. That's been his constant refrain. Every interview he's done, that's the point he hammers. We have to constrain Israel. We have to put real limitations on Israel, which we can, because they depend on us, because they require our weapons and our defense. They have to do what we say. We should use that leverage to create peace in the region for our benefit and the benefit of everybody, not just the Israelis. And he's been proven right. He's been absolutely proven right as Trump comes out saying the deal with Hezbollah situation in an appropriate matter, Israel will not be bombing Lebanon any longer. They are prohibited from doing so by the USA. Enough is enough. So Joe Kent was right. Joe Kent was right, and you were wrong, and that makes you mad. Let's go to clip 27 now.
Talking to Moran. Mr. President, do you know whether Joe Kent was leaking?
Look, I'm not a fan of the guy. If you look at, and you never cover this, if you look at his truths or whatever he went on, if it's X or truth, if you look at his truths or his statements, he was all for everything. All of a sudden, he wasn't. He was a man that I met at Dover. He came and his wife was killed. He remarried fairly quickly. His wife was killed, and I felt badly for him. He ran for Congress, he lost. He ran for Congress again, and he lost. I said, you know, he's a guy, nice guy, seemed like a very nice guy. I met him. He was pretty heartbroken, pretty. But I said, you know, it's a shame. He ran for Congress twice. Call him up. Give him a job in the White House. Smart. They gave him a job in the White House, and this is what he does to me, you know? Being a nice guy doesn't pay off too much.
Mr. President.
Think of it. He loses twice in Congress, ran not very good campaigns, should have won, but he loses twice. How do I get him? I have my people call him, because I didn't deal with him for the most part. I saw him a couple of times, but I never dealt with him at all. I had no idea his ideology was left or right, whatever it is. I can say this. He said very strongly that Iran is not a threat. Iran's been a threat for 47 years, and there's not a country in the world that doesn't agree with me on that. So I take this guy, Joe Kent, who lost twice for Congress, pretty badly and tough, and was devastated, and I know that he lost his wife. So instead of letting him live out his life, I brilliantly have my people call him and offer him a job in security, essentially, in the White House. And what does he do? He goes out and he says that Iran is not a threat to get publicity. Now, he probably signed up with CNN or maybe signed up with your division of Newsmax. I don't know, but probably signed up with CNN or somebody. But if you look at his tweets, X's or truths, whatever he uses, I don't know because I don't follow him. What he said is 100% he agrees with me. All of a sudden he leaves. I never knew he had a problem. Now, I hear they're looking at him for leaking. That's possible. But just so you understand, just to put it to rest, he lost twice badly. He also lost his wife. He's remarried since. He lost his wife. I felt badly for him. So I told my people, reach out to him, give him a job at the White House. This is the thanks I get. Any other?
So again, the things that you got was that Joe Kent literally sacrificed his own career to tell you the truth. You didn't listen to him. You got yourself into this mess. Now you've basically had to do exactly what Joe Kent suggested that you did in the first place. And you could just tell, like, from that, it becomes clear, like, what information is being fed to Trump. And he's like, oh, I didn't know he had a problem. Like, I had no idea. And it's like, yeah, because when he was in office, in the position that you put him in, trying to do the obligations of that role and fulfill that responsibility by telling you the truth about the intelligence that was actually verified, not the lies told to you by Israel, he was kept away from you. You had no idea that he was trying to inform you about this, trying to expose the lie because the people around you kept him from you. And then when he quit, he actually resigned. Not because Iran was not a threat, but because Iran was not an imminent threat that required military intervention. That was false intelligence given to you by Israel to trick you into doing what they wanted, even if it was against America's interest. Just like Alan Dershowitz said, I told Bibi Netanyahu, we got to do whatever it is. You know, we'll handle Donald Trump. We'll take care of Donald Trump. Because, yeah, there's this conflict. There's a lot of people that want to do what's right for Israel, but then there's this, you know, side effect thing that it hurts America. But we'll get over that. We'll get past that. So you're surrounded by anti-American, Israel-first, subversive elements who are lying to you to get you into a war that's not good for America and based on falsy premises. Joe Kent desperately trying to tell you that to avert a catastrophic war. You are completely kept away from him when he finally resigns and actually sacrifices his own career in a desperate attempt to get this truth out into the public and specifically to you. That's also apparently kept from you because you're convinced that Joe Kent just said Iran's not a threat and is a leftist or something. Okay, I guess, yeah, I guess not wanting America to go to war for a foreign state in a suicidal endeavor at a time when our very existence as a nation is tenuous as it is. That makes you a leftist. That makes you a liberal. Because remember, there's only one dividing line between left and right, and it's Israel. Okay? If you are a transgender, open borders pedophile, but you like Israel, you are a Republican, you're on the right wing, you're good, you're smart, you're intelligent, you're patriotic. Okay? If you are a 100th generation, if you're a Native American who's never had family off this continent, who is, you know, hardcore right wing on absolutely everything, goes to church every Sunday, prays before you go to sleep, you know, powerfully commits to biological reality and all this other stuff, but you oppose Israel, well, you're a flaming leftist. You're a leftist and a liberal and you hate America. And I'm not even kidding. That is how people have been indoctrinated. That is what they actually believe. I'll show you a video on the other side of a guy who's convinced that Candace Owens and Alex Jones and everybody, we're all in a cabal because we just secretly hate America. I guess that's the best they can come up with because it makes no sense. Because it makes absolutely no sense. If I hated America, what I would be doing would be blackmailing Trump into getting into war with Iran. I'd be doing everything I could to destroy the credibility of the Republican Party, knowing it's the only, as crappy as it is the only political party who actually pretends to give a damn about American heritage. And I'd want them inextricably bound to the horrors and genocide carried out by Israel. I'd make that the dividing line. If I really wanted to destroy America, I would tell everybody that if you want to support the patriotic American Party, you first and foremost and above all must support the genocidal, murderous, cancerous little state of Israel. And that's exactly what's happening. It's on purpose because the people who are tricking Trump into going to war with Iran genuinely want America to go down. They actually do want America destroyed because they see it as future competition for their Israeli superstate. They're in our country. They were born in America, raised in America. They call themselves American. They have American passports, just like Alan Dershowitz. They are loyal to a foreign state. They're building up that state at the expense of America. They're surrounding Trump and humiliating him endlessly and keeping him away desperately and very effectively, keeping him totally separate and siloed away from the people who are trying to tell him the truth and trying to stop him from humiliating himself and destroying our country for the sake of these spies, these foreign spies. We'll be back on the other side to show you what Netanyahu has to say about all this. He doesn't care what the ceasefire says. He's taking over Lebanon. Big surprise.
I've been an oil field for as long as I've been an info warrior, 18 years. And Texan, born and raised, so I know, like, knives like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Vince Mark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, I mean, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm, like, horrible with equipment. I'm, like, very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows if a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the Ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and...
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or something, like $40. We'll be right back. I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria of the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available. DallasTheStore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you got to do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. DallasTheStore.com to get T3, now available, and methylene blue at DallasTheStore.com. Now, coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors, and that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself as InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts. This is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and your being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. So take action now at thealexjonesstore.com and look at these two new amazing lines. I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling three emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to continue to talk about the ceasefire deal made, announced as of this morning, and whether it'll actually hold and what's actually going on here. Again, the whole thing is hard to even cover because of just how inverted absolutely everything is and how out of whack it is with our historical understanding of the way geopolitics works. And again, it's not about any sort of preconceived notions or the, you know, who is doing what. Just looking at it strictly in a subjective objective way, looking at strictly in an objective way, it's obvious that Israel is the bad guys. Like, what they've been doing is indefensible in any regard. And I mean, just every day there's more and more evidence of that, to the point where you've got the Israeli government like condemning photographs of their own people. It's really gotten to a crazy degree. It's from Ambassador Jonathan Peled. We strongly condemn the manipulative use of the recent cover of L'Espresso. The image distorts the complex reality with which Israel must coexist, promoting stereotypes and hatred. Responsible journalism must be balanced and fair. And this is in response to a cover story from a Italian magazine called L'Espresso, and it's a story called The Abuse, in Italian, L'Abuso, I think. And the cover image is this visceral image of an Israeli settler almost baring his teeth like a chimpanzee as he holds a phone up, filming a crying Palestinian woman. Crew, if you can find this image. And actually, we have, you know, more video of the guy because he's a regular sort of fixture, almost a celebrity there in the West Bank settlements. There's the actual photo. So this is, you know, they're saying, how dare you? How dare you show this image of reality? And there's video of this happening. So, you know, it's sort of a good starting point in understanding the mindset of, here's a photo of what's actually happening. They recognize that what's actually happening is viscerally evil. Like, they're not sitting there going, oh, this is, you know, misconstrued the way this works. It's just, they're just saying, hey, you're not supposed to show this part. You're not supposed to show this part of what's actually going on, the functional reality of how our settlement operates and who's doing it, how they feel about it, who it's affecting. You're supposed to hide all of that. You're supposed to disguise all of that. And it's your fault for showing people the reality. It's not our fault for participating in it. That's sort of the mindset that we're working with here. In other words, they want it to keep going. They know the bad thing is happening, and they understand that it can only happen in secret, that if people knew in a widespread way about what they were doing, people would demand that it stop, and they'd stand up to stop it. So secrecy is the only way that they get this done, so they're infuriated that the truth is being told about it. It's just a constant we see in our world. And of course, I can show you videos again for just how about from today? We can go to clip number 6 here. This is Israeli soldiers put up barbed wire and shot tear gas at Palestinian children who are trying to go to school. And like, it really is like cartoonishly evil. You know, it's the type of stuff that it would make really, you know, powerful anti-Semitic blood libels. But it's just what's actually happening. It's like, yeah, think of just the most sort of senselessly evil thing to do, and then it's just what they do. It's like, what's the problem with Palestinian children going to school? And they're like, they're Palestinian, so we hate them and want to kill them, and this is as close as we can get to killing them right out in the open. So you can see they move up the fence, plant the Israeli flag, and just encroach. This, once again, directly against the explicit orders of Donald Trump. Explicit. He said they will not take any more of the West Bank. There will not be any more annexing. I think he actually said the same thing in that clip. He said enough is enough. The same thing he tweeted earlier today about truth socialed out about Lebanon. Enough is enough. Well, you said enough was enough when it came to the West Bank. And it's only the violence and the annexation of the West Bank has only increased. So let's play that video again. We'll leave the audio on so you can hear the people actually describe what's going on. Let's watch.
This is the path these Palestinian children in the Israeli-occupied West Bank normally take to get to school. But on Monday, they didn't make it to class due to this newly installed barbed wire fence that villagers say was put up by Israelis from the nearby Carmel settlement. The school kids were seen making do, reading and playing alongside the fence as Israeli soldiers on top of the hill looked on. the Yesha Council, a body that represents West Bank settlers, told Reuters, quote, a barrier was put in place to protect the residents of Carmel in coordination with Israeli security authorities after repeated attempted incursions into Carmel. It said there were other routes the school kids could take, but Khalil Hathaleen, the head of Umm al-Khair Council, said the road they've been asked to take is too dangerous, as it's only 300 meters away from the settlement fence. One Israeli human rights group said the barbed wire fence was part of a coordinated campaign by settlers and the military to intimidate Palestinians and drive them from their land. In addition to the fence, Palestinians said Israeli soldiers had also fired tear gas, causing several children to experience breathing difficulties. In a statement, the Israeli military said they used riot dispersal means against adults who it said had tried to reach the settlement's security perimeter. The military acknowledged children were present, but said they were not targeted. The expansion of Jewish settlements in the West Bank has surged under the current Israeli government, the most right-wing in the country's history. The Israeli military has erected dozens of new checkpoints across the West Bank and established permanent and temporary roadblocks.
Now, I want to remind you that Hamas doesn't exist in the West Bank. The West Bank wasn't a part of October 7th. They aren't Gaza. But they're being treated like they are, obviously with the intention of ethnically cleansing the entire area and killing anybody that doesn't want to move. Now, I want to remind you, the West Bank is where the birthplace of Jesus is. It's where there are people who are literally the oldest Christian communities in the world. They are the ones now being targeted and driven out of their land. So they're not Hamas. They're not even Muslims. They're Christian Palestinians who are being viciously attacked on a continual basis by Israeli settlers who are protected by the Israeli army. And if the Palestinians try in any way to fight back, they'll simply be killed, if not kidnapped, imprisoned, and tortured in ways that I don't even feel comfortable discussing. Totally horror-filled. Now, again, this is all just sort of laying the groundwork so you can understand how absurd it is, on top of everything, that this is the country that we are sacrificing everything for. It would be crazy already if we were doing this for a place like Ireland, right? As much as I love Ireland, they've never done anything to anybody, as far as I can tell. Aggressive, like, attacks against anybody? Absolutely not. They sort of have the cleanest record you could ask for in terms of imperialism or abuse of, you know, foreigners or their neighbors. Like, it just doesn't, Ireland doesn't have a history of that. If we were doing for Ireland what we're currently doing for Israel, I'd still be against it on a nationalistic basis because it's not our country. And why are we doing all of this for this foreign country? This doesn't make any sense. We shouldn't do this. But there's something a bit more heinous and despicable about it when you know that the country we are doing this for is not just engaged in questionable military behavior. Their entire history is nothing but that. But from 50 years before they were a country, they were already running terrorist games. They invented terrorism to create Israel, and it has never moved away from that. Like, every prime minister of Israel have all been members of terrorist gangs. The current leadership of Israel, multiple of them have been convicted for literal terrorism, like Ben Gvir and Smotrich. Like, look up their history. When they were like in their 20s, they were caught like building chemical weapons to use on civilians. But because that's what Israel's all about, they weren't charged, like weren't convicted, and are now running the country with exactly the same mindset. It is so insane that America is a part of this. It is so against all of our values. It is like hard to describe because of how cartoonishly evil it really is. I mean, we can just, again, I didn't even collect these like being like, I'm going to talk about how evil Israel. This is just, it's every day. It's every day. There's 10 examples. I usually don't even show them. I usually don't even talk about them, but I could spend all show, every show, just showing you clips of Israelis being the most evil people you've ever seen. I mean, we can go to another one here. I just happened to have this one today. Clip 32. Talking about maternity ward terrorists. Because you're a terrorist if you're not Jewish, according to these people. That's literally the dichotomy they operate under. Let's watch. I'll read along here. He says, Halavi was proud. I captured the department. I think the orthopedic department, approximately 150, and killed them in a hospital. At the same time, in the maternity ward, 300 terrorists were born. 300. Why? And this guy says, they're children, not terrorists. He says, yeah, terrorists. No, they're children. No. They're terrorists, you understand. Doesn't matter that they are literally newborns in the maternity ward. They've never been outside. They're so young. They haven't even opened their eyes yet. They're terrorists, and they have to be killed. They deserve to be killed. It's a sin to let them live, according to these people. So again, it would be one thing if we were doing all of this for a foreign country. That was a great, nice, wonderful country. I'd still be against it. We're doing this for people that literally think, I am a terrorist the moment I'm born. Because there's, in their dichotomy, it's not America and Israel on one side and Hamas and Iran on the other. It's Israel on one side, America and Iran and Europe and Turkey and all of their neighbors on the other side. It's them versus everyone else. And you have to have that mindset. You can see how deeply, thoroughly convinced they are of this mindset because they advertise it. They talk about it like it's normal. And you have to have that level of dehumanization of the other in order to say things like there are 300 newborn terrorists in the maternity ward that we liquidated. I'm telling you, the thing I just don't understand, it's like, how many Nazi movies have you watched? How many times has this exact type of behavior been hammered into your mind that it's the height of evil, and yet you can't recognize it because it's Israel? You're lying. You're a bad person. Yeah. This guy might as well be our president at this point. The grimacing chimp Jew. It's a representative of our soul as it's been twisted beyond recognition. Let's go to clip 11 here. This is in Lebanon. Again, a secular state whose the construct of their state, one of the three main positions has to be occupied by a person of a different religion. I can't remember exactly what the cutout is, what the arrangement is, but it's something like the president is always going to be a Christian, the prime minister is always going to be a Shiite, and the speaker of the house is always going to be a Sunni. Like, they are a multi-faith republic, which is especially ridiculous when you hear Israel's the only democracy in the Middle East. It's like there's a republic directly next door that, by the way, was majority Christian until like the 1980s. And as a direct consequence of Israel's attack on Lebanon in the 80s, not only was Hezbollah created, of course, hundreds of American Marines died in this conflict, and it became a Muslim country directly as a direct consequence. And the Jewish community in Lebanon was eradicated and destroyed by Israeli airstrikes on their synagogue. Okay? Make sense of any of this from an Israeli perspective. You can't unless you're just like, yeah, we want to kill them. We will kill them. We kill them all. We lie about it. And then we keep killing. Like, that's it. That's the argument. That's the moral stance of theirs. There's no justification for any of this. And again, I guess, whatever. We'll move on. And we could go back and talk about regarding the 1983 Beirut barracks bombing that killed 241 Americans. The Israelis had intelligence on the operation they neglected to share with the Americans. Then, as the then Mossad director Nahum Admani reportedly said at the time, we're not there to protect Americans. So, 241 Marines were killed by a truck bomb. This was before Hezbollah really existed. People say they started in 1982. They weren't a thing and didn't announce their existence until 1985. But obviously there was a upswell of local militia activity following the invasion of Lebanon by Israel in 1982. And it ended with this truck bomb at the Marine barracks. But rather than pass on these details to their U.S. counterparts, so Mossad knew. A Mossad informant in Beirut passed on information about a Mercedes truck being outfitted by radical Shiite Muslims to carry an exceptionally large quantity of high explosives. Because of its unusually large explosive capability, Mossad officials felt that there were only a few logical targets, one of which must be the U.S. compound. But rather than pass on these details to their U.S. counterparts, Mossad decided to send only a standard warning, which was all but useless. "We're not there to protect Americans," Ostrovsky quotes Mossad director Nahum Admani as saying. "They're a big country. Send only the regular information." On October 23, 1983, a similar truck smashed into the Marine barracks, killing 241 servicemen. The general attitude about the Americans, wrote Ostrowski, was, hey, they want to stick their nose into this Lebanon thing, let them pay the price. Greatest allies, right? For 47 years, Iran has been trying to kill Americans. Yeah, with Israeli help. Like, hey, it's not our responsibility to look after the Americans. If they want to get their nose, you know, if they want to poke their noses into our business, they'll pay the price. That's the attitude of the Israelis towards America. It's transformed a little bit in the intervening 40 years or so. Because it's now, you have to stick your nose in our business. You have to stay here and fight for us, or we'll kill your president or something. And of course, all of this is basically just a giant farce. I guess since we're on topic, let's go to clip 11 here. This is happening in Lebanon again. Lebanon, secular state. Hezbollah is a militia that operates within Lebanon, but Lebanon is not Hezbollah. They're not Hamas, and Hezbollah is not Hamas. And Hezbollah, despite being smeared as a terrorist organization, doesn't really attack civilians. Tries very hard not to. In fact, I can think of one example in a very long time of Hezbollah's missiles actually hitting civilians, and it was a misfired rocket that was hit by an interceptor that killed some Druze people, and Israel made a big deal out of it because they wanted to use the Druze to attack Hezbollah, and Hezbollah basically came out and apologized and said, you know, it's an accident. But anyway, the point is, we're not talking about a justified war here. Even if their tactics were appropriate, they're just waging a war against a bunch of civilians. But here's a video of them deliberately targeting paramedics over and over again in multiple double strike attacks on civilians. Let's watch.
So,
yeah.
The Israeli military today launched three consecutive attacks on three different teams of paramedics, all operating in the southern Lebanese town of Meifadun. And what we heard from the Lebanese health ministry was that first there was a paramedic team that, as is normal, responded to an emergency call. They were going to the site of an Israeli airstrike where there were wounded people they needed to rescue. And as they were arriving to Meifadun, they were hit by an Israeli drone strike, killing two paramedics at that site and wounding others. And then the paramedics sent yet another team in order to rescue that first team. And as they were arriving to the town, another Israeli strike hit that team and wounded three of those paramedics. So then the civil defense decided to send yet a third team in order to rescue the first and the second teams. They were also hit when arriving to the town. Another two paramedics were killed in that third strike, and more were wounded. The Lebanese health ministry has condemned this as a blatant violation of international law, saying medical facilities should never be a target under the Geneva Conventions. We're still waiting for comment from the Israeli military on exactly what it was targeting in these strikes. And we know from the past that Israel has accused the Hezbollah militant group that it is fighting a war with in the south of using medical facilities and ambulances as cover for its militant activities. But it has not provided evidence of this. And so far in this war, Israeli strikes have killed more than 91 health workers so far, according to the Lebanese health ministry.
So again, they're brutally murdering innocent civilians in Lebanon. It's just terror bombing in a pretty heinous fashion. But a lot of people are looking at the current ceasefire. They're seeing how, so like, this is what I mean is, like, typically in a world that made sense, the country doing that would be the bad guy. Like, there'd be no question. We'd all be aligned against them. This is why it's so confusing, is we've got this one country that just everywhere and constantly, Gaza, just murder fest, genocide there, West Bank, just vicious and brutal annexing of land that's not theirs. Obviously, they're doing insane stuff in Syria. They're just murdering everybody in Lebanon. And it's like, looking at this, you would think that everybody in the world would be aligned against them, and they must be some, they must be like Germany. They must be like an industrial powerhouse that, like, we just can't stop. But no, it's literally entirely because of the manipulation of our political system that allows them to do this, and it's all inverted. They're the bad guys, and they're not going to stop trying to take over Lebanon. I don't care what the ceasefire says. They don't care what the ceasefire says anyway. Here's Benjamin Netanyahu, clip number 19, saying Israel occupied occupation forces will not return to the previously established border of Lebanon. They have annexed a large portion of Lebanon and intend to stay there in violation of the ceasefire agreement. So it doesn't exist. Let's watch. I'll read along here. He says, we have an opportunity to make a historic peace agreement with Lebanon. President Trump intended to invite me and the president of Lebanon to try to advance this agreement. This opportunity exists because since the War of Independence, he's talking about his War of Independence, we have fundamentally changed the balance of power in Lebanon. We dismantled the beepers. We destroyed the massive stockpile of 150,000 rockets and missiles that Nasrallah prepared to devastate the hills. He probably should have used them. And we eliminated Nasrallah. And this balance has shifted in such a way that in the past month, we started receiving calls from Lebanon to hold direct peace talks between us and them, something that hasn't happened in over 40 years. I welcomed this call and agreed to a timeout, or more accurately, a temporary ceasefire of 10 days to try to advance the agreement we began discussing during the ambassador's meeting in Washington. For these peace talks, we have two demands. First, the disarmament of Hezbollah. Second, a sustainable peace agreement, peace through strength to achieve the ceasefire. Hezbollah insisted on two conditions. The first condition, Israel must withdraw from all Lebanese territory up to the international border. The second condition, a ceasefire under the framework of quiet for quiet. He says, I did not agree to either of these conditions. Indeed, these two conditions are not acceptable. We are staying in Lebanon in a reinforced security zone. This is not the 5 points that existed before the lion's roar. This is a security zone that starts at the sea and continues to Mount Dove in the Hermon foothills up to the Syrian border. A security zone 10 kilometers thick, which is much stronger, much more robust, much more continuous, and much more solid than what we had before. So we can take it down. So he says, we're not leaving. We're not leaving. We are taking over this land that we're illegally occupying. They did just command that a bunch of civilians flee their home and then bomb them to smithereens, which is like so much less than what Russia did in Ukraine that started that whole war. The outrage that we had to constantly hear about, the bigger country is invading the smaller country. Don't you understand that this is a matter of sovereign land? And it's like, again, we told you at the time, these people don't give a damn about that. They clearly just don't have principles. It doesn't matter to them. What is good for Israel is good. What is bad for Israel is bad. That is their morality. And that's where it exists. And we can get into it more because I'm not the only one recognizing this. ResponsibleStatecraft.org says Lebanon talks are a farce disguising something much more sinister. He says, in essence, what Israel and the U.S. seek is not a peace deal between Israel and Lebanon, but an agreement to turn Lebanon's government into something like the Palestinian Authority by enlisting it to be Israel's security subcontractor in the north, which is simply not achievable. And that's really what they're trying to set up. They really do want to turn Lebanon into Gaza 2.0 with the intention of eventually destroying it totally, driving the people out and annexing it into greater Israel. That's what they're pursuing. That's still their ultimate goal. This ceasefire, if it even exists for any period of time, is in service of that goal. Otherwise, Israel will not agree to it. And I've seen no pressure brought to bear that will change their mind, regardless of Trump's shrieking.
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade, take 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. It doesn't work? Tell me. Here it is, brother.
Cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Doom, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexshowstore.com. Our medical grade USP ultramethylene blue, exclusively at thealexshowstore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a 1 month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at thealexshowstore.com and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at thealexshowstore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. Thealexshowstore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Israel will not be bombing Lebanon any longer. They are prohibited from doing so by the United States of America. Enough is enough. America's greatest ally just got put on a report. Let me repeat that. And Tel Aviv Levin and you entire, and Benji Shapiro, the entire Israel First crowd, the commander-in-chief of the United States military had to go on a social media platform to tell the world that we're not playing games anymore with the America's greatest ally. This deal is, and I'm quoting the commander-in-chief, this deal is in no way subject to Lebanon either, but the USA will separately work with Lebanon and deal with the Hezbollah situation in an appropriate manner. Israel will not be bombing Lebanon any longer. They are prohibited from doing so by the United States of America. Enough is enough. I don't know what could be more humiliating, because in this entire war, the instigators of additional action that have dragged us in deeper and deeper and deeper has been Bibi Netanyahu and America's greatest ally. This is finally President Trump putting a stop to it in front of the world, ordering them, because they've done it behind the scenes before. And guess what? Israel didn't pay attention. They're going to do what they're going to do. We ain't going to do it any longer. You're going to do it. You're going to do it on your own nickel, and you're going to do it at your own risk. This could be, if properly executed by the United States military and the United States government, could be a landmark moment. And of course, Tel Aviv Levin and Benji Shapiro and all their acolytes and Miriam Adelson and everybody, they're all up in arms. They're all going to be over President Trump. He had to go out. Enough is enough. Take your number two pencil out and underline that. Enough is enough. Our magnificent military, 18-year-old, 19, 21-year-old kids, men and women, Hispanic, African-American, Asian, Americans, whites, have delivered this. And it's time to stop the games. The Middle East is a sideshow, and Israel is a sideshow to a sideshow, and it's time to stop the carnival. Finish this and do it like the American military just did it. He gave you a tool, what Scott Bessent's been talking about, ultimate economic warfare. You shut him down. Now let's make sure everybody gets to the table. Let's get this whole thing sorted. Let's not be writing big checks. And let's get our money out of here. I think President Trump finally had a belly full of this. President Trump, as I say, when he says no more games, no games. So he just put Bibi on notice, no games. Gotta tell you, couldn't be more humiliating. Everybody on the Israel First Project, all your pom-poms, nothing could be more humiliating than what the commander-in-chief was forced to do on his social media platform so all the world saw it at the same time he told you. because they've said it behind the scenes and trying to be nice about it, trying to be accommodating, and you just won't listen. Whether it's bombing, whether it's the whole nonsense about how that we started this whole thing, or about bombing Tehran that night, the oil facilities, or about expanding the war into the Persian Gulf and allow the Persians do asymmetric warfare to shift the center of gravity of battle after you attacked those gas fields against a standing order by the commander in chief. So now he's got to go globally and put it out to America's greatest ally. And Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz and that entire cabal in D.C. should be put on notice. We're not doing this anymore. You're not going to jeopardize the national security interests of our nation, and you're certainly not going to put our young men and women in harm's way, and that's exactly what you guys allowed to happen. And Lindsey Graham should pay for that. If the good folks in South Carolina really look at the facts here, Lindsey Graham will be turfed out.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
You are listening to an InfoWars.com frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to be joined by my guest, Zachary Rell. Zach is, of course, a January 6th prisoner who was, thankfully, had his sentence commuted by President Trump. He was the pro se litigant that caused all these sedition cases to get thrown out. And this is actually a very big deal. It's different but related to the pardons. It could actually end up being better than a pardon for some of the guys involved. We'll break down exactly how this came about and where it goes next. I understand we're about one step into a three-step process that, should it go to completion as it should, all these guys, all the Proud Boys, all the Oath Keepers will not only have their sentences commuted, as has already happened, but will have their records totally wiped clean. They'll be able to get their military benefits and all the stuff that has been stripped from them because of the total fraudulent persecution by the Biden regime. So with that, I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Zach Rell. Welcome to the show, sir.
How you doing? Thanks for having me. I think the last time we spoke, I was in prison.
Yeah, and it looks like things have turned around. So just lay it out for us. What's happening? What's this latest development? How did we get here? Give us the timeline.
Well, it's something that's been in the works for a little while. It all started in August when the star witness against the Proud Boy trial, he pled guilty to seditious conspiracy and he went on the witness stand and lied against us. But in August, he recanted that testimony and he went on two lawyer-led video depositions, and then he filed a sworn affidavit stating that, the FBI, particularly, Special Agent Nicole Miller, coerced him to lie and threatened him. And basically they went, the government withheld, they withheld a lot of information about this whole thing with Jeremy Bertino, who was the star witness. Particularly when we were going through trial, the government told us that they only met with him 3 times. So we only got 3 transcripts of conversations the government had with him. But when he went on this sworn deposition, he said he met with them like over 15 times. And that's a huge, huge deal legally. They call it a Brady violation. And that basically, for people who don't know, it basically means that, you know, the government didn't hand over exculpatory evidence or evidence that could have helped you win your case. So, I mean, I think the 13 other meetings would have been really useful for us to really attack his credibility during trial. And they deprived us of that.
So, if I can just pause right there, because that I think anybody should be able to understand. It's very simple. This was collusion between the government and their star witness where they convinced him to lie to convict y'all. They met with him 15 times, hid that from everybody, total Brady violation. And Brady violations, I mean, it can get a court case thrown out just because a fingerprint wasn't, you know, added to the evidence file. I mean, it's a big deal, a Brady violation. It means that the trial was rigged and it has to be thrown out. So this is like, it's a Brady violation, but it's so much bigger because this is active coordination between the prosecutors and their star witness in order to establish a false set of facts to convict you guys on. That is a show trial by any definition. So I just want to stop you there to emphasize what it is you're saying happened, because anybody can understand that. Some of this stuff gets a little wonky when you look into it, but that is cut and dry, total show trial.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And like the moment I watched those videos of Jeremy Bertino saying all these things, I was just like, this needs to be pursued, and this needs to be pursued hard. And, at the time, and I'm not throwing shade at any attorneys on our case. They're good men. They worked hard. They did a lot of work for our appeal brief, which we fortunately won't need anymore. But, they disagreed with pursuing this matter as rigorously as I wanted to. So I decided I was just going to go pro se at that moment and represent myself and do it myself. And I attacked the government on this. It took just until this past Friday to get a response from the government on the Jeremy Bertino allegations. And the wheels of justice move slow, but I boxed him in the corner. I said when I first went pro se, I was on another show. I told him, I was like, look, we're getting this information out on record and we're going to get it in our appeal, or they're going to dismiss the case. And that's ultimately what ended up happening. And I'll get a little bit more into it
that's amazing. Of course, in criminal law, usually the saying is someone who represents themselves has a fool for a client. Basically, it's never typically a good idea to go pro se, because lawyers just know things that regular people don't know, and you'll fall into traps. Typically, like if it's a murder case, they'll like, do not represent yourself no matter how competent you are. But this is different. Why were the lawyers not going to go after this? Again, this seems cut and dry. What do you think it was motivating the lawyers? Again, you don't want to talk smack about them, but I mean, is it just this like idea of like, well, the system, it works how it works, and we have to, you know, obey the system? Or were they just not like, why? Why would they not pursue this?
Without getting in any opinionated too much, but I want to say, like, I really think part of the reason was that they were looking at it from a black and white lens, you know, and their lawyers, you know, they look at it as the legal angle, but they were ignoring the very important part of this entire thing, which was the middle, the gray area, which was the political angle of the whole thing, right? You know, and the fact that this man went on record and made these explosive allegations, there's two things in my mind. I was like, it's either going to lead to a dismissal or it's going to lead to a pardon. And that's why I pursued it so hard, because I was like, to get these allegations out here. I mean, the man recanted the testimony. He was part of the entire case. He was the whole reason we were convicted of seditious conspiracy. The prosecutors during our trial mentioned him numerous times in their closing statements. And he was the sole reason why. So, you know, in my mind, I was like, look, if President Trump is ever going to cite a reason why he would pardon us, it would be because the star witness recanted his testimony. But at the same time, you know, this situation, I made such a compelling argument, and I used the appeals court to back me up in the trial court to try and get this evidence in. And that's what I meant when I was like, I kind of boxed him in the corner. I forced him to have to choose to either allow it to come out or throw the case out. And my wife was, she did not support my decision to go pro se originally. She said, you're going to regret it. She's like, these are attorneys. So they know what they're doing. And I was like, no. I was like, I have to do this. I was like, nobody's going to pursue this as hard as I'm going to pursue it. And I was like, it was terrifying for me. It really was. I was scared as hell, but I did it, you know, and
no,
decision I made.
It feels like it'd be easy for me, or, you know, it'd be easy for me to understand how you would just go, hey, I'm out of jail. I'm getting the hell out of here. I'm not looking back. You know, it's kind of a risk of you actually bringing this back up and almost going back into the lion's den and go, no, we're not done with this fight yet. That is a very risky move. I'm so glad it paid off for you. That makes this whole thing that much more impressive. Cause, you know, that really is, you know, the amateur going up against Michael Jordan and dunking on him. I mean, that's huge. Okay, so this guy recanted his testimony. Your lawyer said it's nothing. You decide, screw it, I'm going to pursue this. What happens next?
Well, so, you know, it took me a little while to get my pro se status approved by the appeals court and the trial court. The trial court, which is where we were prosecuted, and we obviously went to trial, you know, they ignored my pro se motion for the longest time, and it kind of got frustrating for me. So then I was just like, you know what? I'm going to file something with the appeals court. And the appeals court responded by basically telling me I need to refile this in the trial court, which is the lower court. And that prompted the trial court judge to have to actually look at my pro se motion and approve it. So like I said, this recant came out August 4th, I think, was the first day. I wasn't able to get it into the trial court record until February, I think. February. So finally February rolls around, and you know, it's on record. The whole motion I made about Jeremy Bertino and how we need to do a Rule 33. Rule 33 is basically when you finish your trial, if new evidence arises, you have 3 years from the date of conviction to get it in there through a Rule 33. So that was my absolute goal. I was like, I have to get this on record because we need this evidence in our appeal. You know, I mean, the star witness recants his testimony. Why would you not want it in your appeal? Well, so the government was trying to delay responding at first. They're acting like they didn't get the videos that I sent. So that delayed the case for another month, basically. And it was interesting because the reply date that they were ultimately granted lined up right with our appeal when we were supposed to file our appeal. Our appeal was due April 13th, and the government's response to the Jeremy Bertino accusations was April 10th.
Wow.
So I seen this immediately as I was like, I see what they're doing here, because my reply was due April 24th. That basically means that litigation for this whole thing wasn't going to commence before the appeal. So I'm like, all right, I see what they're doing. They're trying to stonewall me from getting this in here. So I filed a motion with the appeals court requesting an abeyance. And an abeyance is basically an indefinite delay of the appeal brief schedule until we got this Bertino thing litigated. And they didn't like that too much. The government opposed that motion in the appeals court. They said, they're like, oh yeah, you know what? You know, it's fine. This will get litigated in a couple months. You could just do an amendment and get it into your appeal in a couple months. And I countered with them. I was like, there's no guarantee that I could get this in the, you know, they're even going to rule on that in the next couple months, you know? So I was like, this accusation came out in August, and we're still having conversations about how to proceed on this. So I was like, absolutely not. And, the appeals court suspended the whole appeal brief a couple days later. And I was like, oh, wow. Maybe they agree I'm onto something here. And then a couple days later, the trial court prosecutors, they put in their April 10th response to the whole Vertino thing. And they were like, yeah, and this is Jocelyn Ballantyne. I'm sure you guys reported on her before.
Oh, yeah.
She replied and said that the judge should defer litigation of the whole Vertino thing until after our appeal is commenced. So this directly contradicts and conflicts with what the attorneys for the prosecution were saying in the appeals court. And I ran right back to the, appeals court with that. And I put a supplement motion in and I was like, this is exactly why we need the abeyance, because the lower court doesn't want this information getting out and we need it for our appeal. And there's no guarantee, like I said, there's no guarantee that, you know, that this is going to be ruled on. And this is prime example, number one, why it may not be ruled on. And three okay. days later, we get a dismissal.
So sort of a, I don't know how to put it, a chicken and the egg sort of thing. It's like, okay, you can't do this motion until you file the appeal, but to file the appeal, you want to use the evidence from this motion. So it was kind of, they wanted to put you in an impossible situation where you had to file the appeal before you could get the information that was necessary for your appeal. Do I have that generally right?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Literally that. That's it. Yeah.
Well, so it's still still crazy. Machinations. It's still manipulation of the court system, trying to screw you over. So again, this wasn't an honest mistake. That's what I'm learning from this, that this wasn't looks like, you know, we messed up here. We want to make it right. This looks like, oh crap, they caught us. Let's cover up our crimes. I mean, it sounds like this is more, I don't know if what they're doing is criminal, but obviously they're attempting to cover up what I would consider criminality in throwing you guys in jail on knowingly false testimony. So, all right, good. Glad we clarified that. Okay. So they actually, so what happened? So this wasn't an appeal. This is something different aside from the appeal, that you guys are doing that would happen in the normal course of things, right?
Yeah. This was what's called a Rule 33. Like I said, anytime you get new evidence of, you know, you have to go back to the trial court. You can't insert new evidence into an appeal. The appeals court is done just for they look at mistakes and procedural errors in the trial court. So the Rule 33 gave me an avenue to insert this new Jeremy Vertino evidence into our trial record, essentially, that would then be allowed to be litigated in the appeals court. So that's why that whole process went down like that. And again, it's evidence that was very damaging to their reputations. And like you said, they didn't want it in there and they probably didn't want to admit fault, whether it's covering up or not. I'll take it for what it is. You know, it turned out to be a dismissal. The federal government's, they're not going to admit wrongdoing. How they do that is they toss cases, you know, they'll silently toss cases. And that's basically what they did here.
So is that the latest that happened? Because I have this story from yesterday. The Justice Department is seeking to throw out the January 6th conviction of ex-Philly Proud Boy leader Zach Rell. The move would serve as the latest development in President Donald Trump's efforts to effectively erase any criminal consequences from the ill-fated attempt to keep him in power. Of course, that's the biased way they phrase it. But is that more or less factually accurate as to the latest update with you guys' case?
Yeah. And this came right after the supplement motion and right before the appeals court was due to issue their ruling, granting my abeyance to completely delay the case. So, like I said, I boxed them in the corner on this one here, and, they were forced to, like I said, either let this information come out on record or throw the case out. So, it's a huge development and it's going to help us out tremendously. It's better than a pardon, because a lot of us are military veterans, myself included. You know, Joe Biggs is another one. He was my co-defendant and, you know, we were deprived of all of our VA benefits, disability payments and retirement payments. And they came after us for money they paid us after January 6th. It's disgusting what they did. So now this will vacate the entire, we were never charged. So all the military vets who were charged and convicted of sedition conspiracy, they're going to get back pay from January 6th on. Wow. And it's good. It's a huge, huge victory because we should have never been deprived of these benefits in the first place. I mean, I was in prison with people who raped and murdered people and they still received their benefits, but you know, you protest the stolen election, you know, in 2020, and all of a sudden, you should be stripped of all your benefits like you never served. It was disgusting what they're doing to us. And I'm just so happy that, you know, we're going to get vindicated here, and some of us are getting our lives back. So it's great.
That is absolutely huge. And again, for those of us just joining me, my guest is Zach Rell, and you can follow Zach on X at @Zach_Rell. That's R-E-H-L, Z-A-C-K, I'm sorry, Z-A-C-H underscore R-E-H-L. And you can go to givesendgo.com/defendZach. That's givesendgo.com/defendZach. And of course, you're still fighting this, and, I don't think he'll mind me reading this, but Stuart Rhodes texted me this, and I just want to make sure that we have this accurate. He says, "The 12 of us who were commuted but not pardoned have not been pardoned. So this isn't a new round of pardoning, even though maybe the way I expressed it, it sounded like I said that. The DOJ filed a motion to DC Court of Appeals asking appeals court to vacate our convictions and then remand our cases to the trial courts for dismissal with prejudice once the DOJ then files motions to dismiss it in the trial courts. This is not a done deal yet, but it's the first step of a three-step process, and it's likely the Court of Appeals will grant the DOJ request. Historically, the DC Court of Appeals is deferential to the DOJ in such motions. I see this as the DOJ throwing in the towel in a sense, because it's also them brushing all their crimes and constitutional violations under the rug and avoiding possibly losing in the Court of Appeals. All of our appellate briefs were due today, but now because of this, the Court of Appeals suspended our briefing schedule, so we didn't have to file our briefs. He says, once this is over, if the court grants the DOJ request, it will actually be better than a pardon, because your convictions in the indictments will be totally gone as if it didn't happen. You'll get your military rights back, all your rights back, military benefits, and likely back pay on disability." So is that a pretty accurate rundown of everything going on? Is this the first step of a three-step deal?
Absolutely. Yeah. He's 100% correct. And it's kind of what I was getting at there, with the whole back pay thing and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the appeals court does have to approve it. But it's kind of beyond me to think that they're going to oppose it, because if the DOJ doesn't want to pursue this for various reasons, I mean, they can't force them to continue to fight it. So, I mean, they're going to, especially since it's an unopposed motion, everybody on all sides, both sides agree, like 99% of the time the court goes with the unopposed motions requesting. And in this case, I don't expect it to be any different, but he's right. We're not out of the woods yet per se. But unless they want the Jeremy Bertino allegations to get out on record, and who knows? I mean, I was hoping to get Jeremy Bertino on a witness stand while we were doing some investigations into his matter further. But we don't know what he's going to say, and they don't know what he's going to say. So, I mean, unless they want Jeremy Bertino on the stand, then they should just continue on and toss this out. So,
wow.
And I'm happy with that.
That's what we around here call a 360 win, a win-win situation. Either you get to put them, on the hot seat and ask them questions and get the truth out there, or they got to admit that the whole thing was fraud from the beginning and let you guys go. That's a brilliant setup you've arranged there. And, not in a dishonest way. It's just, they've sort of been hoisted by their own petard. They've been screwed by their own, wily machinations and deception. Has anyone from the Trump administration reached out to you? I'm wondering, because of course he did the pardons, and we're very happy, and I'll always be, glad I voted for him for that reason alone. But have they been really instrumental in this? Have they been fighting you? What's been your relationship with the Trump administration through all of this?
Nobody directly from the Trump administration, beforehand, I spoke with. I did get a congratulations from Ed Martin, who's been a fighter for all J6ers. I definitely give him credit. I'm sure he was working in the background doing everything that he could to help, help us all move on to this. And God bless him. And God bless all the activists and whatnot that supported us as well. Raising awareness to a lot of this stuff, it really helped as well, because, we had to put pressure on the government. To do the right thing here. And it was a combination. It wasn't all me. It was a combination of the ones fighting the other 12, even Enrique Tarrio, he was always there to help me out and pumping an article out anytime I, filed a motion. Well, and these things all work together,
It's just absolutely huge. So what is the next step? The immediate next step?
Well, the next step is obviously just to wait to, you know, get the judges to sign off on this. And then, after that, the next step is compensation. You know, at this point right now, I sat in prison for 4 years for charges that are not going to be on my record anymore. So, and that's the same thing for, you know, the other 12. You know, we all are getting our convictions completely wiped out. Like we were never charged, but yet we were still hostages of the U.S. government for 4 years. And,
at the very bare minimum,
we're looking at.
You've really achieved something incredible here. Now I'm one who's never going to be satisfied. I think everybody that did this to you should be in jail. That's what I'm pushing for. But this is an incredible and really unexpected victory. Congratulations, Zach.
Thank you. Appreciate
That's huge.
I've been in the oil field for as long as I've been an InfoWarrior, 18 years. And Texan, born and raised, so I know, like, knives like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, I mean, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm, like, horrible with equipment. I'm, like, very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows there's a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or selling for like $40. We'll be right back. I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade. Take 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
He's Cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now. TheAlexShowStore.com.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
I have some very exciting news. Optimal Human is hands down the best green superfood, super nutrient concentrate I've ever had. The folks at Bigly have had this out for years, and it's their star product, and it became a bestseller very quickly because people, when they got it, loved it so much. If I told you everything that's in it and how concentrated it is, it would take an hour. This has the kitchen sink and then some in it. If you're missing any of the trace, not just the stuff they say is essential, but all the other trace elements and vitamins and prebiotic and probiotics, it's got everything in it. And again, these are all concentrated, and it's got a bunch of stuff for healthy energy in it too. So folks absolutely love Optimal Human, and it works synergistically with the Shilajit, the IRC Moss, the Ultimate Turmeric, and the Methylene Blue. We've been sold out of this. It came in, and I finally got it a couple days ago, and man, is it awesome. It is a game changer. If you haven't gotten it, you are really missing out at TheAlexJonesStore.com. And so it never sells out. Be sure to become a subscriber and get special discounts when you do that.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Freedom Command Central, it's the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We, of course, are coming to you live from the InfoWars headquarters here in Austin, Texas. And we're going to be metamorphosizing here very soon, sooner than you might think. InfoWars will no longer exist as an entity because we have been treated to the exact same rigged court system that January 6ers were convicted in. Luckily, we're not going to jail for decades on end. That might come later. That might come if the Democrats regain power. We'll get into that in just a second. But we have survived and we have honestly thrived and continued to build and continue to expand in the face of relentless attacks. And very soon we will be out from under the wet blanket of the bankruptcy and we will be able to actually manifest our full potential. It's very exciting, but we need your support to do it. We cannot do it without you. You keep us on the air and in the fight by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We so appreciate that you do. And we give you, I was going to say, a fantastic product. A million fantastic products. So it really is a 360 win. You get a fantastic product that you will love, whether it's something like the Ultramethylene Red that's now on sale, the T3 Iodine, which is a total game changer. Or if you're just buying the merchandise, it's always the highest quality and patriotic as you can get. It's a true 360 win. You keep us on the air in the fight and get something great for yourself. Right now, Ultramethylene Red is 72% off if you sign up for the subscription. You can lock it in for life as long as you're subscribed, but we're almost at that 1,000 subscriber limit. We cannot offer this low price for everybody, so you've got to go now to get Ultramethylene Red for the insanely low price, 72% off, and you can see what it does for you. There's also new InfoWars shirts, which are a mix of the classic fan favorite designs and brand new InfoWars originals. You've got to get these designs before they're sold out because it will be likely the last run of some of these designs ever. So get them now while you can. You are the InfoWar. And of course, that's always been the message. And it's good because you sort of establish these principles, these foundational elements of your organization. And if they're grounded in traditional Americana, then you just, they never change. It's, you just have the same mindset forever, and it always works. It always applies. That's centering humanity, being suspicious of these big power structures that almost always use information to manipulate you, and the ultimate goal being a total enslavement of the entire planet under a one-world government that they are clearly driving towards relentlessly. And I'm wondering how to intro this next video because sometimes strange things happen. It's actually almost like predictable at this point. See, we've made our entire brand on exposing liars, on exposing false flags, on exposing play-acting kabuki theater nonsense that convinces people to do things that they shouldn't do. That's what we do. That's what our entire thing is actually. They sort of stole the word from us, but debunking. We debunk things. We are the original debunkers, if you will. And so it's always strange when we then get accused of doing some false flag thing. A, we don't need to. We're already attacked enough. It's not like we need to fake additional persecution on top of the persecution that has been wielded against us for so long. So that doesn't even make sense in the first place. But also, our entire brand is legitimacy, is founded on our legitimacy, is our audience knowing that they can trust us to tell the truth, even if it doesn't benefit us. It actually makes us anti-grifters, right? You hear the word grifter a lot. What a grifter is, by my definition, is somebody who says something they don't believe because it benefits them. It's people who lie or put forward a mindset, an idea, a lifestyle. You get a lot of people out there that are complete degenerate scumbags who all day, every day are talking about their life as a Christian man and the struggles against sin. That's grifting. That's lying. That's telling a lie because you're trying to capture an audience to get their money. It's literally the opposite of what we do. If we were grifters, if what we said and believed was dictated by what's popular, we wouldn't be holding the positions that we currently hold. What we're doing now, I mean, I'm actively, ever since the Iran war began, I've been losing followers on X. If I cared about that, then I wouldn't keep saying what I'm saying. If that's what was motivating me, popularity or prominence or connections to the elite or money, we'd be taking a whole different tack. We're anti-grifting. We are saying what we do believe, and it's losing us money. It's losing us, you know, popularity amongst people who, you know, trust Trump endlessly. It's kind of unfortunate, but at the end of the day, I would hope that even if you disagree with us, you can recognize that our positions and the stances we hold are informed entirely, completely, 100% by our own genuine belief set and our knowledge that we spend all day, every day accruing from every different source. Again, you might disagree with us, but you can be absolutely certain and bet your bottom dollar that we're not saying things we don't believe. And that's a very important currency to have at this time when so many people are liars, so many people are grifters, so many people are taking positions they don't genuinely believe because they think it makes them money. We are the standouts in this. We are the outsiders. We are the ones who buck the trend. But this is confusing to some people, apparently. Apparently this confuses some people. One of them made a video where, and I've showed a couple videos like that, they all kind of have this same vibe. You know, it's like the video I played, I guess it was earlier this week, of the guy, again, trying to slander InfoWars and going, where do they get their money? How do they make so much money? Have you ever bought from InfoWars? And it's this whole, like, I've done this for a while. I know how these things work. So I know there's something we're not. And it's like, what is the accusation? What are you actually saying? What do you actually believe? Nothing. You have nothing to go on. You're just insinuating things vaguely, believing that stupid people will hear things you didn't actually say, that they'll come away believing your sort of strange hints at something that isn't true. This is another one of these videos where, again, if you were totally ignorant, if you totally had no knowledge of anything going on, I could see how you could believe this. But I don't understand how anybody with even cursory knowledge of how this whole scandal is unfolded would believe what this guy's saying. I'll break it down here, but this is clip number 13. This was posted saying, wake up, people. This guy lays it out well. The woke right is scheming. We're scheming, folks. Let's watch.
Don't you find it just a little bit strange that all of these former Trump supporters have mind melted at the same exact time, all using the same script to come out against him?
Yeah, let me pause it right there, buddy. Let me pause it right there. For our radio listeners, if we can bring up the image, I want to say who it is he's talking about. So he's pointing at this collage of people. You've got Candace Owens, Megyn Kelly, Alex Jones, Tucker Carlson, Joe Rogan, Glenn Greenwald, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and the Hodge twins. Even though it looks like they took one of the Hodge twins and duplicated, copy-pasted them, that's fine. They are twins after all. Okay, so he's pointing at these people. And he's saying, isn't it interesting that they all dropped Trump at the same time with the same script? Okay, but they didn't, did they? At all, like even a little bit. Like Joe Rogan started getting cold feet after people were killed by ICE. And he said, hey, maybe mass deportations isn't worth it. Or, you know, I can't actually stand by this. Candace Owens, I think, broke with Trump in like 2025. I was looking up on AI because I'm just like, what is he even talking about? And I was going to go through each one in particular, but just... You should know. Like anybody who's watched this space knows all of these people broke with Trump at a different time over a different situation. Often that it was exclusive to them. Like Candace Owens started going against Israel following the genocide they were waging in Gaza. And she got fired from Daily Wire. Like her process of moving away from the MAGA Israel first Trump centered cult was like a long process over like a couple years. And it started with being anti-Israel. Tucker Carlson, on the other hand, obviously actually was fired from Fox for his support of Donald Trump. And over time has sort of moved away from sort of sycophantic Trump support, but again, on the basis of why are we allowing Israel to do this to our country? And I don't, I guess at this point, Tucker is like fully anti-Trump. I don't know when he first went that way. I guess the latest thing was him really being outraged and disgusted at Trump's behavior of tweeting out a threat of genocide and saying praised be to Allah on Easter morning. So, I mean, again, it's just, I guess it depends on your ignorance. I guess it depends on you just literally not knowing about any of this, because that's an absurd statement. All these people turned on Trump all at the same time with the same script. Totally asinine. Doesn't even make sense. If anything, you could say, Alex, and I wouldn't even say we turned on Trump. If somebody asked me, if somebody came up to me in the street and just said, are you a Trump supporter? I'd say, yeah. Yeah, I voted for him. I support him. I support what he said he wanted to do. I want the closed border. I want the, you know, deep state taken down. They're enemies with Trump. I still am functionally a Trump supporter. I just despise everything he's done in the recent past. I see his failure to uphold his campaign promises as an existential threat to my nation and my life and my family. So I'm not in support of what he's doing. I'm desperate to have him back on track because he is the president and he's the one that needs to be doing this. But I'd still say I'm a Trump supporter. I'd still say in general, I'm rooting for the guy. It's just I feel like he's turned on us and has become somebody else. That's why we keep referencing like King Theoden. And I reference this all the time. It's like, do you support King Theoden? It's like, not with Wormtongue turning him into a monster. No. But in general, and who he is, who he was for the last 10 years, I still am supportive. But, you know, Alex, I'm sure feels the same way. I mean, he speaks for himself when he does his show and is always couching his criticism of Trump in the love and support we have for Trump. So again, it's just ridiculous. So Candace Owens, who, you know, goes on Piers Morgan in 2025 and says Trump is just a, you know, series of failures, a little bit different than Alex Jones in March of 2026 going, well, what the hell is wrong with Trump? Why do we get into this Iran war? So let's just, we'll go back to the guy. But just from the outset, it doesn't even make sense on the surface, but we'll return to it. He doesn't even make any other points. Like, we could just end it there because this video beyond this point is just like building on this initial lie. So I could just stop it now, but let's go back to the guy and we'll hear him out. We'll hear out what he's discovered about our nefarious plans to like tell the truth and stick to our guns regardless of what Trump says. He figured us out. Let's watch.
Normally in the past, what would happen is that they would defect slowly, one at a time, maybe different times, one in 2020, one in 2021, maybe one in 2017.
Let me just pause right there. Okay. Because first of all, they did all drop Trump or move away from Trump at a different time, just not back in 2017 or 2021 or any of those dates that he mentioned, because Trump hadn't gone to war with Iran yet. What is wrong with people? Like, it's the same thing as Israelis saying anti-Semitism has skyrocketed because of October 7th. It's like, no, it's because of the genocide you guys committed. Like, what do we not understand about time, about temporal permanence? A thing that happens after a thing and is caused by that thing is not just some independent, like, it's all inverted from these people. Why would we have dropped Trump in 2017? Why would we have dropped Trump in 2020? We dropped Trump for a reason. The reason arrived last year. But I guess if you ignore that, then yeah, this is all mysterious. I guess if you ignore the thing Trump did that everybody's against, that all of these people speak about being against, I guess if you take that out of the equation, then we have a real mystery on our hands. Right? I mean, what are we doing here? Let's go back to the video. So again, it was, oh, you'd expect him to drop in 2017. Why? Why? He didn't send America into war with Iran in 2017. He didn't spend all of 2017 deporting critics of Israel while allowing an increase of H-1B visas. The things that we oppose him for, the things we don't like him doing, are the things that caused us to turn on him. That's why we turned on, like, what? It's called temporal reality. It exists regardless of what you think about it. You cannot just remove a major cause of a thing happening and then look at the thing and say, this is a mystery. I guess I get to speculate wildly. You don't need to speculate. There was a cause. You're looking at the effect. What is going on here? Let's go back to the guy.
Almost like they had a meeting.
Almost, yeah.
Especially the Hodge twins. Really shocked.
Okay.
Marjorie Taylor Greene was not a surprise. Joe Rogan is leaning to fall off the Trump train.
Yeah, like 2 years ago.
Tucker, Megan, Candace, all at the same time. Alex Jones just recently apologized to Candace.
No, he didn't. Let's just pause it there. No, he didn't. What are you talking about? And how does that contribute to your argument? Alex didn't apologize to Candace at all. And not that I remember. I don't know. You guys see Alex apologize to Candace? Did he? I mean, did he apologize to her? Or did he just say, like, let's forget it? Oh, he did formally apologize? Okay. So what does that mean? So how does that contribute to the... So that was part of the meeting, I guess? So I guess 2 months ago, when Candace had already dropped off and Marjorie Taylor Greene had already dropped off, and the Hodge twins, they dropped off in like 2023. So when was this meeting? So apparently they all dropped at the same time, except a bunch of them dropped a couple years ago. Some of them dropped last year. Alex dropped a month ago, and he apologized to Candace for being in a fight with her 2 months ago. So what is that? So why would he be in a fight with Candace if we're all in a secret cabal together? So again, I can go endlessly about just like the logical nonsense in all of this. I genuinely don't even understand, like, okay, what does Alex apologizing to Candace have to do with anything? But I want to let him keep going, because really the point of this is the projection, almost the imposition of motive, ulterior motive from us, from Alex Jones and Candace Owens and the Hodge twins. So Candace Owens was ahead of the curve, and I officially apologized to her. Candace Owens plays a compilation of former Trump allies disavowing and criticizing him as the tarnishing of his legacy continues. He's even getting slammed on Truth Social, his own platform. Alex Jones, quote, I'm really glad he's differentiating and saying you're not with me because I'm not with you. I don't want to be at your cool, corrupt kid Howard Lutnick, Jeffrey Epstein class table. Thank you so much for delineating that I'm not with you, a sinking, burning ship. Anon posting, how can you call them losers when you lose to Bibi Netanyahu in Israel every single day? Interesting. So, okay. I guess that... Okay. Good to see. I'm not sure what he's really apologizing for, but okay. I guess just for going off on her. With me, she took the high road. I now think Israel was involved. And Melissa Tate, so Erica killed Charlie. That's not what I'm saying, but I'm saying in general, I think she believes what she's saying. Okay, so again, all right. So again, what this has to do with we're all on a team defeating Trump, I couldn't even tell you. Not even sure what that proves or disproves about all of us being in a secret cabal to bring down Trump. The question is why? Why would we want that? What would be our motivation? Every one of these people that he mentions is like far, far right, as far as I'm concerned. And myself included. And like, especially, I mean, it's almost like comical. Like for Alex Jones and I, like our last names are Jones and Smith. Like we're as American as you can possibly get. Literally our ancestors fought next to each other in the Texas Revolution. Like, what would our motivation be for not supporting America, for not loving America? Like, we're not leftists, we're not liberals. This is what I mean, is this weird dichotomy has developed where people literally think that if you don't support Israel, you must be a secret leftist. That's crazy. That is a crazy thing to think. Let's go back to the guys. He tries to figure out what would motivate all these people to disagree with Trump about something. It couldn't possibly be that they actually disagree with something that Trump did, that he said he would never do, that he promised he would never do, that he ran on not doing. That couldn't possibly be a natural and legitimate reaction to Trump's behavior. There's got to be a conspiracy and some sort of ulterior motivation behind it, I guess. Let's watch.
At play here. And maybe they're setting up the 2028 election and they don't want a MAGA candidate in there.
Yeah, maybe.
This is my thinking. They don't want a MAGA candidate. So they're going to band together. They're going to speak against Donald Trump and MAGA. So when the election comes around, some of these people may be paid handsomely, but also they may want spots in the cabinet. And they've already been told, we need you to denounce Donald Trump. We need you to denounce Donald Trump and everyone that he supports. We want you to denounce MAGA, and we want to get rid of that base. So we need your 40 million followers or whatever it is amongst all of these guys on social media to keep hearing the banging of the drum, the banging of the drum. You have very strong support, and we want to make sure that we get that base to vote for whoever we want to win. And it's going to be some moderate Republican. All these people will remain Republicans. They're just no longer MAGA. Watch this space, because you're going to start seeing the fruits of their labor come out, and you're also going to see them be rewarded for their treachery.
Rewarded by who? What are you even talking about? This is what I mean. It's like, I'm sorry. You do not have the IQ to be a conspiracy theorist. I'm sorry, you've been demoted. You have to go back to lurking. You have to go back to listening to other people, because you have tried to think for yourself and it has not worked out. I'm sorry to tell you, you're no longer allowed to theorize about conspiracies. You don't know how they work. You don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about? Now, interestingly, a couple things about this. For one, all of these people were Trump supporters, right? Like, he acknowledges they've turned on Trump, meaning they were Trump supporters, meaning they helped Trump across the finish line. Like, he's concerned that all these people have been turning against Trump and that this could be a, you know, really damaging to the movement. He recognizes the power and influence that these people hold. Did they get rewarded for their support of Donald Trump? Did they support Donald Trump on the basis of the promise of future reward, or did they support Donald Trump because they actually believed it and did it even though they were in many cases damaged and harmed for their support of Trump? They didn't support Trump from the beginning because they thought it benefited them, but now that they don't support Trump, it must be because they're doing it for personal gain. Okay, if they did things for personal gain, then wouldn't they have only supported Trump if he offered them something in return? But he didn't offer them anything. They supported him anyway because they say what they actually believe. Trump has turned on them, but like this is the thing. If he had actually rewarded the people that got him into office, if he'd actually given cabinet positions or even just whatever council positions, like Mark Levin sits on the council of, you know, counterterrorism or whatever, if he'd actually brought in the very people who started the movement that got him elected, who created the America First MAGA mindset before Trump was ever on the political scene, if he'd actually worked with them and helped us or any of these people in any way, things might be different now. He might not have made the choices that he's made. We might be on a better track, but he didn't. He expected their support to just be there regardless of whether they were personally, you know, rewarded for their support, which again, it's not why we supported him, but if I was Trump, I would have tried to help out some of the people who were responsible for my success. Just seems reasonable and like something you would do, even if you were a bad person, you'd do it because strategically it would be the good thing to do, to show people, hey, you helped me, you get rewarded. Wouldn't that be a good sort of thing to set up? But no. The people that helped him get thrown under the bus and destroyed, the people that were against him, like Ben Shapiro and Mark Levin, they get positions in the cabinet, even though they never helped him in the first place. But Donald Trump, it's not even about the personal helping. Like, yeah, he could just simply allow his DOJ to follow up with our endless evidence of corruption and crimes against us, which would just be what he would do normally if he just actually cared about law and order. He didn't do that. But it's not about our private, you know, benefit, what we get from Trump. He hasn't done the things he needed to save the country. That's the issue. That's what we're mad at. And I'll show you why on the other side. It should be obvious by now. The Democrats are going to go insane and we're going to be the targets.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plan. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive. The two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them.
Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue. Blue.
I know. Blue. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town.
I know. I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. Blue, blue, blue. I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Get yours now at thealexshowstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
The EU, like a deer in the headlights, stares down shortages now intensely facing Germany.
Many citizens, many medium-sized enterprises, and many businesses in general are under severe strain and have, of course, seen this not only at the petrol stations in recent weeks, but also in terms of energy costs for businesses, whether in the form of fuel or raw materials.
How can we reduce the demand? Because, of course, the least expensive energy is the energy that is not used.
While in the UK, the British economy continues to circle the toilet bowl, according to the IMF.
The International Monetary Fund has downgraded Britain's economic prospects more than any G7 country in its latest update on the state of the global economy.
Front and center, the fallout in Ireland continues after a week of fierce nationwide fuel protests that saw farmers and truckers block refineries, ports, and highways, bringing supply chains to a grinding halt. Over punishing diesel prices, global shocks, and Michael Martin's coalition carbon tax machine.
Government is now extending the temporary measures to reduce excise duty on petrol, diesel, and marked gas oil from the end of May to the end of July, postponing the increase in carbon tax from May until the budget in October.
The willful obstruction of public roads and the movement of vehicles and persons are offenses under various statutes, including the Public Order Act and Road Traffic Acts. As part of our well-established graduated policing response in dealing with protests, Garda Síochána is now moving to an enforcement phase in relation to those impacting on critical infrastructure unless they desist and disperse from these blockades.
How can meetings and meetings and nothing for the people? There's thousands and thousands and thousands of Irish farmers and truckers, business people, builders of every corner of this country are all over the place. Absolutely frustrating. They don't know whether they're going to be in business in a few months' time. And this is the result. Nothing.
Gas stations ran bone dry, traffic chaos choked Dublin, and emergency services scrambled while ordinary citizens bore the brunt. In a desperate bid to calm the anger, the government rushed out a 505 million euro support package that included lower fuel taxes and delayed the new carbon taxes, threatening to devastate ordinary Irish citizens. The damage runs deep, igniting raw fury at an establishment that brazenly places climate dogma ahead of Irish families struggling with housing shortages and the chaos of uncontrolled mass immigration.
What did Big G
Jim James Bond himself won't do. He said we'll turn the army on our own citizens, which is reminiscent of something that you would hear in South America. It is reminiscent of a Pyrrhonist. And then we have the man that turned away from the woman in Kentucky not so long ago, but during this election, and we didn't want to hear. And all of a sudden, he's gaslighting the country, saying he's concerned. He's concerned about the 900,000 people on waiting lists. All of a sudden, he's concerned about the 60,000 people on housing lists. He's concerned about the 116,000 people that are waiting for HAP. That's what this government is concerned about. You're concerned about nothing, only serving yourselves.
Irish political party Sinn Féin rammed through its no confidence motion. The government countered with its own confidence motion and held the line, defeating the challenge.
Don't forget, folks, what's happening here in Ireland is happening everywhere. The amount of messages I get saying it's happening in Canada, it's happening in Australia, it's happening in Europe. This is a global agenda, 2030, right?
Tiché Michael Martin clings to power for now, yet the votes exposed a rattled regime scrambling amid public outrage as the Emerald Isle's people question how long distant globalist agendas will override their right to affordable fuel and basic national sovereignty. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
I've been an Oldsville for as long as I've been an Info Warrior, 18 years. And Texan, born and raised, so I know, like, knives, like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, I mean, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm, like, horrible with equipment. I'm, like, very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So, anybody out there listening, who knows there's a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or something for like $40. We'll be right back.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Alex Jones Show. Third hour is on. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Jay Dyer will be taking over for the fourth hour here, and I believe Rob Dew is hosting the War Room this afternoon. We have a lot more to cover in my final hour with you, including some breaking news here that, you know, I don't know, it shouldn't be a surprise exactly. From Zero Hedge, Trump's claim about the delivery of Iran's enriched uranium is baseless, according to Iranian news. So from the Iranian news organization MER, M-E-H-R, Iranian source in a conversation with El Arabi and El Jadid, Trump's claim about the delivery of Iran's enriched uranium is baseless. An Iranian source in a conversation with Al Arabi and Al Jadid, only civilian ships can pass through the Strait of Hormuz through the routes specified by Iran. The announcement of a temporary reopening of the Strait of Hormuz has nothing to do with the current negotiations in Washington. We waited a few hours to make sure the ceasefire was established in Lebanon. After that, we temporarily opened the Strait of Hormuz. The announcement of the temporary reopening of the Strait of Hormuz and the ceasefire in Lebanon is part of the agreement. Negotiations on controversial issues with the United States are still ongoing, but due to Washington's extravagant demands, there's no clear prospect. Washington's demands in the negotiations are still unreasonable. The U.S. president's claim about taking Iran's enriched uranium is baseless. Okay, so what part of it was true, I wonder? I mean, I don't know. I don't, like, how are we supposed to understand what's going on here? Donald Trump's come out. I mean, this is like the 10th time that Donald Trump has come out, said he has an agreement with Iran, that Iran has just come out and been like, no, dude, we did not say that. What are you talking about? It's crazy. Like, obviously there was an agreement. So why is he adding all this other stuff on top of it? That's what really doesn't make any sense. If this was a good agreement, if this was like, okay, we're having a ceasefire, the Strait of Hormuz is open, like, that's fine, that's good. But then on top of it, he's like, oh, and they're totally going to give us their uranium. And they're just like, no, we didn't agree to that. What are you talking about? And so it's like, okay, was it a misunderstanding? Is Trump being told things that just aren't true? Like, where is the breakdown of communication? Or is Trump just saying this stuff thinking that it will make it real? Like, I don't know. Anybody know? Does anybody, can anybody tell me what exactly the real agreement was? Because the authorities in our country who are supposed to keep us informed about this stuff just make stuff up, apparently, and endlessly. Iran bats down baseless Trump claim on handing over enriched uranium to U.S. as he declares Hormuz never again closed. Iran is like, this is temporary. It's not open fully. You are not taking our uranium. Like, what are you talking about? What is going on? It's crazy. Trump praises Iran for fully reopening Hormuz choke point. Iran's Araghchi says the Strait of Hormuz is declared completely open. However, Iranian official tells Fars, if the maritime blockade continues, it will be considered a violation of the ceasefire and the Strait of Hormuz transit route will be closed. U.S. mulls cash for uranium deal as three-page MOU peace plan takes shape. Trump claims the U.S. will get the nuclear dust. Iran officially denies. Peace talks reportedly happening on Sunday in Islamabad. Trump says most of the main points are finalized. It'll go pretty quickly. Odds of a permanent peace plan by the end of the ceasefire are soaring above 50% by the end of the month. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I mean, it depends on a couple things. It depends on Iran being willing to give up their enriched uranium. Seems to be a sticking point. Was never an agreement in former negotiations up till this year when, as Joe Kin points out, the sleight of hand maneuver was engaged by Israel to change it from no enriching to the point of nuclear weapons to no enrichment at all. That has been the sticking point ever since. And Iran has no reason to give up their nuclear dust. Come and get it, right? It's just like, well, what are you going to do? Come and take it? Good luck. So I think we already tried that last week. Okay, so that's the first sticking point. An impossible ask of ours that they're just not going to ever agree to. And then there's the fact that the agreement of peace between Lebanon and Israel doesn't include Hezbollah, who's the people actually fighting Israel. So, and Israel apparently doesn't care about the ceasefire and is just going to continue operations anyway, according to Netanyahu. So there you go, folks. Again, you can say what you want. But like, it's, you know, at the beginning of the show, I said, I don't know how much I believe this because we don't believe it. And it's just like you wait an hour and Iran comes out and it's just like, no, what are you talking about? We did not agree to any of that stuff. That's just crazy. It really is. Because it just goes along with like the whole thing about Lebanon being included in the ceasefire in the first place. Trump puts this big threat out. Oh, we're going to destroy all of Iranian civilization. It'll never return. You have 48 hours to open the strait. Iran doesn't open the strait, but Trump says, oh, we've accepted the basis for negotiations. Iran backed down. They gave us this 10-point plan. The 10-point plan, according to the people that presented it to Trump and that got Trump's agreement, included a Lebanese ceasefire as part of the, you know, requirements, the prerequisites for the ceasefire to continue. And Trump's just like, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, actually, it's not in the agreement. It's like it was. It was in the agreement. Israel violated it. So it's just this endless song and dance. And I'm telling you, Iran is the only party in this entire conflict that has consistent messaging. I give you, oh, they're just lying. They're just dishonest. It's like this constant projection of like, you believe what Iran said, you idiot. It's like they keep telling the truth and the Trump administration just keeps lying. It's not my fault. for noticing. It's really not. Iran keeps making agreements, and then Israel and Trump violate them. You can keep calling Iran dishonest, but they just keep telling the truth. So I don't know. I don't know why you people are so brainwashed into thinking that Iran is just like constantly lying. They literally are the only people in this entire conflict whose statements you can actually trust, even a little bit. But again, it's not about Iran. It's about what's happening here in America. And it's about the way that the Trump supporters, we are currently being lined up for execution, essentially. And again, it's just you think about the J6ers, you think about what happened throughout 21 and 2022. And you should go back and watch old stuff. I was watching some, you know, video from 2022, right as all these people were being arrested, all the January 6ers and all the, because remember, they said we need a shock and awe campaign. We're going to go after the influencers first. And like, you might have forgotten, there was a time where like the left wing was dominant online. Their clips were going viral. They were controlling the conversation. And right wingers were literally like afraid to speak out. Half of them were like on the run, being arrested by the Fed. Like it was already, it got pretty bad. And without winning the election in 2024, Zach Rell, Enrique Tarrio, Stuart Rhodes, they'd still be rotting in prison for the next 20 years. Like I can't emphasize enough how serious this is and how beyond disrespectful the Trump administration is being to the genuine American concerns of his actual supporters. This idea that we're just too stupid to understand how great this is for America. The Republican Party is being set up to lose, and the Democratic Party has been continually radicalized for the last 10 years. And so we're in this dichotomy now where Trump is not doing the stuff he should be doing. He's not even doing what he's like legally allowed to do. He's not taking his prerogatives and his ability as the president to the nth degree, like pushing the envelope and seeing what we can get done and, you know, doing whatever we can and letting the Democrats try to stop us. Like, none of that. There has been none of that. But you see it with everything else. And I've got another example of this today. And this is the thing that's really frustrating. This is the thing that really is beyond disrespectful. Is we're sitting here going, we elected you to represent us. We elected you to deal with our problems. And we elected you for a 4-year period, at the end of which you have to have all of this done. Because we're in this false dichotomy. We're being set up because while Trump is not doing what he needs to do, even within the legal bounds, he's certainly not exceeding legal boundaries to actually do what is necessary. Screw the 14th Amendment. We're stripping citizenship of all the people who came over here and plopped out a baby. No, that's not how it works. Retroactively, we're stripping you of your citizenship and we're shipping you back home. Nothing even remotely close to that. Everything when it comes to America is this soft touch. We can't make the leftists mad. The instant that they start protesting, we back down. It's like totally pathetic. We're getting nothing done that we need to get done. But the left doesn't know that. The left still thinks Trump is as tyrannical as ever. And again, we talked about this throughout, I mean, everything. Throughout all the ICE nonsense with the protesters being killed and stuff. This was the outrage that we were feeling, was that all he's doing is pissing off the left. That's all he's doing. Now, if you're pissing off the left, but you're also crushing the left, then that's fine. Piss off the left by decommissioning their systems. Piss off the left by deporting 50 million people in 4 years. Piss off the left by getting something done. We're getting nothing done but his rhetoric and his, you know, beating on his chest, you know, ego tripping is convincing leftists to be more radical, convincing them that they're in a life or death struggle, convincing them that he is a tyrant, but we're getting no benefit. So we get all the negatives of having a tyrant, but we don't get any of the positives, which there could be. Because if we're going to have a tyrant, I at least want him being a tyrant for us. You know, be a tyrant who tyrannically imposes the Constitution on a bunch of scumbag criminals. But he's not. He's not doing what he needs to do. He's not being a tyrant. He's not taking extraordinary measures to deal with the extraordinary circumstances that we're in. He's doing none of that, and the left is being radicalized even more than they ever have been. They are openly stating their plans. Right now, they have already issued arrest warrants for ICE agents. So Trump is still in power. We're a little over 1 year of him in the presidency with the Congress, with the Senate, and the Supreme Court. We have domination of all three branches of government, all four, you know, major bodies of our federal government are all in the hands of Republicans. And we're getting amnesty by the back door. We're not getting the SAVE Act. We're getting the Dignitad Dreamer 2.0 Act. We're getting war with Iran. We're not getting the SAVE Act. We're getting nothing. We get absolutely nothing. So it's just like, what are we supposed to do here? We have all of the power we could possibly give you, and in return, you are actually doing what the left wants you to do anyway. Giving people amnesty, screwing your supporters over. So it's just madness. It is utter madness. And this is a great example of this type of thing. We, of course, cannot survive another 4 years of open border. We should have been deporting the same number of people that we were welcoming in. The 4 years under Biden, we should have an equivalent amount of deportations under Trump. It's a joke. We are less than maybe 2% of the way there. Maybe. The people doing this to us, the people who opened the border, have not been punished. The Alejandro Mayorkas, the NGOs that brought the people in, that gave them instructions, gave them maps, gave them money, gave them cheat sheets to say exactly what they needed to say, because this whole thing, again, just a ridiculous farce, similar to like we saw the story yesterday in the UK. They have undercover footage of the UK NGOs teaching immigrants to get asylum. You have to say that you're gay so that they don't want to send you back home because gay people get punished at home. Okay, so we are basing asylum claims off of immutable characteristics, but those immutable characteristics can be invisible and non-provable. So just anybody can come over. So you have NGOs that are training migrants to say the right combination of magic words, as if saying abracadabra, I fear for my life, suddenly makes your asylum claim valid and we legally are prevented from accepting it. Again, it's all ridiculous. The point of all of this is that the entire time that all these people were flooding over the border, the main drivers of that were organizations like Catholic Charities. Catholic Charities were the engine, along with the Hebrew Immigration Society. That was the immigration engine getting people into our country. To this day, nothing has been done to strip them of their nonprofit label. Nothing has been done to investigate their actions. If you're training somebody to lie in order to, you know, defeat laws meant to keep them out, like, that's, you're a criminal. Nothing has been done. Nothing has been done to the Catholic Charities. Nothing has been done to punish them for their treason or undo the negative consequences they've had until the Pope criticizes the Israeli war. When the Pope comes out, Pope Leo comes out and breaks with Trump basically and says we shouldn't be supporting the war in Israel, or just that, you know, the prioritizing of the Trump administration is out of whack. Trump yanks millions from Catholic Charities amid Pope feud. So this is what I mean. if at any point in Trump's administration he felt like doing literally anything for us, this is how easy it would be. If Trump got into office and said those Catholic charities have flooded our country with migrants, we're stripping them of millions of dollars, great, I'd be so happy. He doesn't do that, though. He lets them take our millions of dollars of government funds, our taxpayer dollars. He lets them flood the border. He lets them, you know, advertise against him. He lets them do whatever the hell they want as long as they're hurting America. But then the Pope insults him. He takes it personally. And now he's willing to take millions of their dollars. Now he's willing to. And it happens to have to do with Israel, because the only thing Trump is ever willing to do is for Israel. That's it. Nothing else. He would never in a million years take millions of dollars from Catholic charities because they're harming Americans. It's only when the Pope goes against the Pope must be punished. Catholics must be punished for daring to break with Israel. So now he'll take their millions of dollars. Just like he would never in a million years take away the endowment of Harvard just because they teach that white people are intrinsically evil and that whiteness must be destroyed. Would never happen. How could he? It's free speech. It's the sacred institutions. We must have government separating. Oh, they're protesting Palestine? Take their endowment, force them to change their leadership, force them to adopt our rule set in terms of what can be discussed on campus, bankrupt and destroy them if they refuse. Every single time Trump does anything, it's for Israel. It's crazy, but that's just where we are at this point. So you can be mad at us for recognizing this and noticing this, or you can be mad at Trump for not doing anything for us, despite the ability, the willingness to not just do what's necessary for Israel, no matter what, but doing it for like actually tyrannical things, doing things that he wouldn't do in any other situation. He just does it. He just does it. You can sit there and go, Trump, these people brought in all these migrants. These people are your biggest enemies. So, they're Catholics and I like Catholics. It's like, oh, well, the Pope doesn't like your hair. And he's like, withdraw millions of dollars from the Catholic charities, bankrupt them right now. Okay. I think we see where his priorities lie. I think you see what he cares about, where he's willing to exercise his power. Do we just need to portray everything? I mean, does he know there are Nazis in Mexico? There are Nazis in Mexico and they came over the border. We have to get a million deportations this year, Trump. It's for Israel. Can we tell them it's for Israel? Then will we get something done? Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Miami has helped provide vital services to unaccompanied minors for more than 60 years. But now it could shut down within a matter of months after the administration canceled an $11 million federal contract. Not because they are flooding our country with immigrants, not because they're taking taxpayer money to break American law, but only and exclusively because the Pope questioned the war with Israel. And now Trump is willing to do something that might accidentally help the American people. Whoops. Meanwhile, F it, just do it. Carville lays out Democratic plan to add states and pack the court to retain power. I know that we always say, like, this is the most important election. I know that, you know, people will get tired of us. You know, they claim that we're fear-mongering for just relaying to you what the Democrats' plan is that they are already acting on. See, I never even, like, finished making my point. But the point is that, like, while we're in power, while the Republicans have all of the power we can possibly give them in Washington, D.C., people in California are still issuing arrest orders for ICE agents. That's just how confident they are. And they're going to do it. So I hope everybody understands now. Look at the way Donald Trump has treated Alex Jones. Look at the way he's treated Tucker Carlson. Two people who've had their lives ruined because of their support of Donald Trump. Directly. Tucker Carlson was kicked off of Fox and made persona non grata because he reported on the 2020 election being stolen. And other things that were, and airing the January 6th footage that they didn't want publicized. Supporting Trump supporters. He gets fired from Fox, becomes persona non grata, has to rebuild from nothing because of his support for Donald Trump. Donald Trump ignores him completely until a couple years later when he says he's an idiot. Nobody should watch him and he doesn't care about him. Alex Jones got sued because he supported Donald Trump. The first time anybody ever related Alex Jones to Sandy Hook in the media was 1 week after Donald Trump was elected. It was an attack on Trump, saying Trump is associated with this guy, Alex Jones. Alex Jones talked about Sandy Hook. Isn't Trump a bad person? The last 5 years and more of misery and chaos we have experienced here at InfoWars is a direct consequence of our support for Donald Trump. He throws us under the bus the minute it's convenient. All of the ICE agents that are risking their lives carrying out deportation orders, they will all be thrown in prison by the leftist, and Trump will say you deserve it. Everybody who's helping Trump right now will be on a Democrat hit list the minute they get back in power, but he doesn't seem to care because he's not doing anything to stop it. He's instead protecting his own ego and Israel, and that's it. So wake up, people. I will show you on the other side what the Democrats intend once they get back in power. And if they succeed, they will remain in power forever. It's not even a question. The question then is how rapidly they put us all in gulags, and it's not a joke.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plan. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive. The two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly, with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high-quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria in the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available. DallasTheStore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you gotta do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. TheAlexandroStore.com to get T3, now available, and Methylene Blue at TheAlexandroStore.com.
If you suffer from low energy, if you're not feeling the energy that you used to feel in your younger years, you should try this product and see if it makes a difference for you, because there are many causes of lack of energy. But one of them can be a lack of cellular energy support through pre-methylated nutritional supplements like this that can help you. You can go buy a bottle of vitamins at any store, you know, any Walmart, anywhere that's got cheap B12, which is cyanocobalamin, or the cheap B vitamins, or the cheap minerals like calcium carbonate, which is ground up limestone, you know. Alex Jones doesn't use the cheap low-end versions of these products. And I know this as a nutritionist, as a food scientist. I look at Alex's labels and I'm like, yes, these are the high-end ingredients that I would be using in my own formulations. So really, I'm always impressed with what the Alex Jones Store is doing with their product line. So check it out. TheAlexJonesStore.com, Ultramethylene Red.
Alex Jones, patriot. A man they tried to silence. They came for his voice, his platform, his life. But they can't stop him. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's most unstoppable force. Alex Jones will be that man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger. Faster. Louder.
Go
to alexjonesapp.com, the number one news app in the world.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Live from the Infowars.com studios, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show. Tomorrow's news today.
Sometimes I feel I've got to run away.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show, Infowars.com, band.video. I'm telling you, I only say the same thing over and over so much, but like, you gotta realize that they're actually gonna do it. And we already saw a preview of this with January 6th. It honestly, it just makes me depressed knowing like what we're going up against, because we're actually I can't even put it into like serious enough words to get across. Like, working in InfoWars, it always, like, people would be like, oh, are you scared, like you're gonna be, I don't know, you know. It's like, well, you're making yourself the enemy of the establishment. It's like, yeah, but I'm just talking. We have the First Amendment. I don't call for violence. I don't, you know, say things that are illegal. Like, what's going to happen? I'm just saying what I believe. And of course, it's always peaceful, and I don't lie. So, you know, what would be the issue? Sure, people can file frivolous lawsuits and stuff, but, you know, legally, government's never going to be able to do anything with me because I've got the First Amendment. It's a shield. It's, you know, pretty much invulnerable. And then you see that it doesn't exist. There is no shield. It doesn't matter. If you don't do anything, they'll throw you in prison for the rest of your life. And that's what I really have to wonder. I mean, now that the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys have been pardoned and are out again, you know, this was a positive development. But I mean, if Kamala Harris had gotten into office, she obviously wouldn't have pardoned anybody. They'd still be there for those 4 years. By the time, you know, 2028 rolled around, would anybody care? Would this be a major topic? Would it be enough to pressure whoever the next Republican president was to, either way, they'd be in jail for what, 8 years in the intervening time? These are guys who didn't do anything wrong. Do you understand what they did to the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers? These were people that weren't even at the riot in most cases. They were convicted of an unspoken conspiracy. You know who can be convicted of an unspoken conspiracy? Literally anyone. It means that somehow you telepathically communicated that you were approved of a criminal act, therefore you are eligible for punishment for that criminal act. Do you realize how crazy that is? That's what they did to Americans in 2021. In 2022, they ripped people away from their homes. They bankrupted them. They abused them endlessly. Some of them ended up committing suicide because of the abuse. Others are permanently injured for life, blinded in some cases because of abuse that they experienced in prison. At the very least, these people spent extended periods of time in solitary confinement, which is torturous. And they did nothing wrong. They didn't break a single law. No matter how much you want to stretch it, even if you want to go, well, you know, this guy in the Capitol fired a fire extinguisher and he wasn't supposed to. That's not who we're talking about. We're talking about people that never went in the Capitol. In the case of Enrique Tarrio, wasn't even in the same city as the Capitol. He was thrown into prison for 20 years. So going back in time, if these guys weren't pardoned, like, the question is, next time the cops come to pick up somebody that didn't commit a crime, are they going to be like Stuart Rhodes and Enrique Tarrio and say, we did nothing wrong, we're innocent, we have truth on our side, we'll subject ourselves to the system and trust that justice will be served, only to see in first person up close the way a trial is absolutely rigged? They threaten people to provide false testimony. They rely on that false testimony. Even if the testimony is proven to be false with video evidence, as is the case where Steve Baker discovered video evidence that shows the testimony that put the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys away was fraudulent. This is different than the testimony we were talking about with Zach Rell. This was a testimony of Lazarus and another Capitol police officer who claimed they witnessed the Proud Boys do things. It was later proven on video they were not in the area they claimed to be in when they claimed to witness the thing happening. Could that happen to you? Could that not happen to you? If they have people in the federal court willing to testify to false testimony, willing to ignore video evidence that would exonerate you, how could anybody be safe? What's going to stop them? So, you know, the question is, next time they come, I feel like we'd be looking at the choice of, okay, you can either be put in prison for life or like die in a blaze of glory, Because if I haven't committed a crime, I'm not letting myself be arrested. That's not the way this works. And I haven't committed any crimes. So you try to arrest me, it's just not, it's not going to happen. I don't know. I don't know what to do at this point. This is why it's so, like, freaky to imagine. Can you not imagine a time 5 years from now? Democrats are in power. They pack the Supreme Court. They're issuing arrest warrants for people on the basis of their very dangerous ideas they're spreading. And suddenly, people like myself are getting our door kicked in by the FBI and we're dragged away in the middle of the night. I mean, do you not see this as a possibility? Do you not understand where we're headed? Because the Democrats understand. And I can't believe that the Republicans in power, like, I don't get it, man. What do these people think is happening? Even the likes of J.D. Vance, who we were talking about yesterday, where he's going, guys, calm down. I know you're mad about the Iran war, but look, we got great tax breaks and we got, you know, lower immigration now than we had before. Meanwhile, the Democrats are sitting there salivating like wolves outside of the gate, just waiting for the paddock to be opened, just waiting to go in and just tear us all from limb to limb. And we're sitting here like, you've got wolves to kill. You've got danger right there that you need to defend us from because they're coming after you even before they come after us. So, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? What do you think the future holds? On his podcast with Al Hunt, James Carville explained, if the Democrats win the presidency and both houses of Congress, I think on day one they should make Puerto Rico and D.C. a state, and they should expand the Supreme Court to 13. F it, eat our dust. Carville, curiously, for being on a national podcast, seriously suggested the Democrats should keep this plan quiet. Says, don't run on it, don't talk about it, just do it. Again, you know, what do you say to this? Like, you've got half of our population that votes for the Democratic Party who will be driven to madness on the basis of claims that Trump is destroying our democracy. And they can't even explain, like, what that means or how it works or what the threat is. It's just nonsense. They're just like, well, Russia exists. Therefore, our democracy is rigged. It's just total nonsense. Meanwhile, the leaders of the Democratic Party, the most influential, popular, and well-known members of the Democratic Party, not fringe characters, not far-left progressives that say crazy stuff all the time, the heads of the Democratic Party, all of them, by the way, the Pritzkers, the Carvilles, the Pelosis, like, they all are saying this. And they're openly acknowledging, if we tell the truth, no one will vote for us. If people knew what we were going to do, they would never let us take power. Therefore, we must unilaterally and in a conspiracy hide what we intend to do from the stupid gullible voters so they vote for us thinking we're moderates, and then we can pack the court, rig the elections, and never let go of power ever again. That is literally what they're planning on doing. This is why it's like, it's, this isn't just like, oh, it's another election, this one's the most important one of all time. The Democrats are telling you that they have a blueprint so the Democrats never lose an election again, and they're going to implement it. 100%. They're going to give citizenship to everybody that arrived. So that alone will never win another election again. 30, 40, 50 million people from the third world all become citizens, all get to vote in our elections, all vote for Democrats. That's it. We're overwhelmed. It's done from that alone. Maybe you want to question that. Maybe you say, hey, I don't think they should be able to just give everybody citizenship. What are you going to do? Take it to the Supreme Court? Guess what? They're going to add four members to it. They're going to create a permanent majority in the Supreme Court that will allow them to do whatever they want. You think the Constitution is going to protect you? Who's the final arbiters of the Constitution? The Supreme Court? They're going to pack it. So what recourse are you going to have? Again, the immigration thing. They're going to give them all citizenship. They're all going to be able to vote in our elections. That'll be it. It'll be over. Any, you know, radical leftist like this that gets in, like Abigail Spanberger, will do the whole popular vote thing so that her state pledges its electoral college votes to whoever just wins the nationwide popular vote. So, like, you won't be able to vote your way out of this. You won't be able to argue your way out of this in court. You won't even really be able to, you know, whip up concern for this, because all of the people that supposedly endlessly prattle on about their love of democracy and our sacred Constitution, they're going to go along with all of this. They've been told the greatest threat to the Constitution is Donald Trump, and that what James Carville is suggesting is somehow defending American values. So, like, what do we do? What do we do? Because this is not climate change. This is not some vague threat that doesn't actually exist. This is real. It's coming. These people are insane and radical and vicious. They already have thrown innocent people in prison for 20 plus years because of their political beliefs. And they got away with that and are getting away with that as we speak. The very same people that did that are still in the DOJ, still running operations. So, like, frankly, I think we should have turned against Trump a long time ago. I think everybody should have recognized what's happening in the Trump administration and the current Republican-led government is so woefully inadequate to deal with the problem that we're facing. This is an existential crisis. Do you think that the modern American police will refuse orders to go confiscate guns or go arrest people whose crime is a speech crime? Even if now you think that there's still some remnant of humanity left in the average American, that they even have the capability, will, or intelligence to know an order is illegal, let alone to stand up against it. Do you still think that we even have a remnant of that left, which I would seriously doubt, because we've seen it before, because we saw during Katrina. I mean, this was 20 years ago. During Katrina, there's videos of National Guardsmen going door to door, collecting guns, talking to the camera, saying, this is so weird, this is so wrong, this is unconstitutional what we're doing. Let's go do it, and just going and doing it. So it's not even a question. But even if you thought, like, well, you know, Democrats might try to stuff, but, you know, try that here. You know, our police will never go along with it. Why do you think they're replacing your population with foreigners? Why do you think they're accepting illegal immigrants as police officers in places like Oregon and Chicago? Yeah, maybe the good old boy who became a police officer because he truly believes in law and order, fundamentally understands it. Yeah, maybe he would have the tenacity to stand up against an illegal order. Some dude from Bangladesh that the mayor slapped a star on, he's going to do whatever he's told. He's not even remotely American. Like, what? Why would he care? And again, it's like depressing that he's just saying this. James Carville is just saying this. This is how confident he is. This is how confident they are. He knows nothing's going to be done to stop this. He can literally say, and this is like fight. I mean, this has been a threat forever. They've been promising to do this forever. And forever, it's been like the same, I've used the same metaphor, which is like, we're in power now. Like, we have the gun. The gun is sitting on the table. It's within our reach. It's ours. We have it. And James Carville is about 50 yards away and he's yelling at us. He's going, I'm walking over there, I'm taking that gun, I'm shooting you with it. And we're sitting here with the gun, watching him walk closer and closer and closer. And every step he takes, he's promising again, soon as I get to you, I'm picking that gun up and I'm shooting you in the face. And he's serious, and he's going to do it. And he's walking. And the whole time we're sitting here going, but you shouldn't. No, but you're not supposed to shoot the gun. But I have the gun, though, so why would you be threatening me with the gun? He's just walking over, and he's just going to walk up and pick up the gun and shoot us. The thing is, we have the gun. The thing to do now is to pick up the gun and shoot the guy that keeps telling you he's going to shoot you. If anybody took this seriously, that would be, like, the necessary and inevitable reaction. Like, I don't even want to pack the Supreme Court, but hearing James Carville say we are packing the Supreme Court if we ever get back in power, the only thing to do then is go, okay, guess what we're about to do? Because what are they going to say? No, you're not allowed to do that? Okay. But you're going to. So we're just doing it before you. You're just mad we're doing it first. Why can Republicans not take on that mindset? What do they think is... do they think the Democrats are going to say, you know, those Republicans had a chance to pack the court and they chose not to. And we should reward that respect of our system, since we love it so much. He's on a national podcast telling Democrats lie to the constituents so we can get extremists in office. Openly, he is announcing that. He is publicizing that. The need of the left to pack the Supreme Court is obvious. Many of the proposals coming from the left are clearly unconstitutional. You will need a partisan majority to make political changes that these figures hope will give the Democrats a lock on power for years to come. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. This is what Carville said. In quotes, quote, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. A Democrat is going to be elected in 2028. You know that? I know that. The Democrat president is going to announce a special transition advisory committee on the reform of the Supreme Court. They're going to recommend the number of Supreme Court justices go from 9 to 13. That's going to happen, people. I believe him. I believe him because there's nobody on the Democrat side that would stop him. There's nobody that actually genuinely believes the thing they say. There's not one of them. If anything, what we're seeing here, and with these types of statements from every Democratic leader, they're all making these same types of statements. The thing we have to understand is they are all significantly more radical than we even understand. Like, we know they don't actually care about democracy when they claim to. Because it depends, right? If the Democratic will is the majority population, well, if the majority population is white, then that's bad because it's the majority forcing their beliefs on the minority. Then if the white people become a minority, then they can't be in charge because then that's minority rule. And that's the way it doesn't matter to them. So we know they don't believe in anything that they say. That much is obvious. We know every time they cry about the Constitution, it's literally just a cynical appeal to try to trick us into letting them violate the Constitution. But, like, it's so much worse than that. They are actual radical communist socialists that are openly engaged in manipulating and destroying our system so that they can retain power forever. They're actually saying they're doing this. They are going to do it. Once they do that, there is no ability of us to legally or lawfully stop them from carrying out whatever the hell they want. It's just like, if we could just get this lesson into people's minds. But I don't even know if we can, because, like, literally, I mean, go, we should do an experiment. I don't know. I don't know what the reaction would be. I actually would like to see this tested. I'd like to see a Democrat deal with this. Explain to us why it's okay that the National Democrat leadership is telling their underlings, lie about your positions to get elected. They know that if they were honest, they would never get elected, and so they have to lie, completely destroying democracy as a whole. Because again, the democracy has, you know, our system, the electoral system in general, has sort of a self-correcting measure where if somebody claims that they're a moderate, governs as a radical, then nobody will vote for them again. Because, well, you can't do that twice. You can't go back and say, look, I'm a moderate. All that radical stuff I did, that was a fluke. Vote for me again, and I'll definitely be moderate this time. You know, with an informed populace, nobody would believe that. But the media knows what's happening. They know how to cover this. They're collaborating with this attempt to subvert democracy. So they're not reporting on Abigail Spanberger's insane radical agenda in a way that makes it seem like an insane radical agenda. They're reporting on it as if it's moderate. They're lying to the people and telling the people that the radicals are actually moderates. So they're engaged in this as well. And of course, it doesn't even matter because once they're in power, if you get in power as a moderate, but you're actually a radical, and then you change all of the rules so that you stay in power forever and your party remains in power forever, then you can just keep being openly radical and it doesn't matter because the people that would vote against you have been disenfranchised, which is exactly what they did in Virginia. The public remains opposed to court packing and making DC a state. This is why Carville wants candidates to keep quiet on the plan and run like Virginia's Abigail Spanberger as faux moderates. Then, as in Virginia, they can move to fundamentally change districts and rules to guarantee their hold on power. It is their open, established, and advertised plan. And I really want to know if the average Democrat saw this, what they would think about it. They'd probably be fine with it. That's the success of the brainwashing that the American people have been under. Now, interestingly, this article that I just read, I'm not sure where it's from. This is from jonathanturley.org. Interestingly, it ends with a quote. Says it's a mentality summed up by NEA President Becky Pringle. The question is whether rage politics can convince a people to destroy the very democratic system that has brought centuries of stability and prosperity. It's kind of a coincidence. The NEA, I assume he's talking about the National Education Association, which held their 2026 Leadership Summit recently. And we have a video from it. So the publication says NEA's annual National Leadership Summit helps to develop activist leaders and prepare them with the knowledge, skills, and ability necessary to lead relevant, thriving associations and to lead in their professions. Our unified, strategic, and interdisciplinary approach to leadership development reinforces and supports key leadership competencies in 7 strategic areas. That sounds great, right? It's a federal program teaching educators to be leaders in their community. Should we take a look at what the meeting looked like? Clip 28 here. This is from a documentary called The Death of Recessed. Here was the NEA Leadership Summit in 2025. Let's watch.
I love the model right now of what the Satanic Temple is doing when they keep doing all the prayer circles in schools for other religions. That's a good model to use.
It's not a time to say, but I don't want to get political. Damn it, they're making our kids political pawns. They're making us political pawns. They're making our futures and our careers political pawns. It's time to play.
But you've got to get to them first, before the parent does. With the kids, if they need something signed, who should sign it? I said, whoever likes you the best.
Can you make sure books are more visible? You're not pushing it on them. We're not telling them to read it. But can you show them that those resources exist?
I'm curious, do you have specific resources for, like, Christian families?
I truly believe most of these brainwashed people, they just haven't had a chance to sit down and actually listen.
Tell me where in the Bible exactly you are upset with me.
Where in the Bible does it say I shouldn't be doing that?
I was torn. My faith teaches me to love everyone, but it also commands me to defend children. Jesus himself warned about this very thing. In Matthew 18:6, Jesus says, "Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea."
So again, that is the National Education Association's National Leadership Summit, where undercover footage shows teachers praising the Satanic Temple, calling Christians brainwashed, and encouraging students to evade parental approval. You saying, quote, "You've got to get to the kids first before the parents do." So again, it's like, is any of this being dealt with? Can somebody point me to a single instance of Donald Trump stopping the abject brainwashing and destruction of our children by the federal education system? Or doing anything at all to prevent the oncoming tyranny of the left that is openly advertising their plan to pack the Supreme Court so they can do unconstitutional things to us. You point me to one thing Trump has done to address any of this, and I'll shut up about the Iran war. Deal?
I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade, take starting meds to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. It doesn't work? Tell me. Here it is, brother.
Cheers.
Looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexshowstore.com. Coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors. And that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself as InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts. This is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and your being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. So take action now at thealexshowstore.com and look at these two new amazing lines.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
If by Rudyard Kipling, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good, nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken, and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools.
1776 will commence again.
If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but are none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and, which is more, you'll be a man, my son.
This is an emergency transmission from deep in the heart of Texas, the U.S. resistance against a global corporate combine empowered and funded by Communist China, allied with the big mega banks that set up Communist China in 1949. communist Chinese have taken control of U.S. telecommunications infrastructure. The communist Chinese have taken control of Hollywood. The communist Chinese have taken control of the main universities. This is all confirmed. This is not a drill. Big tech in Silicon Valley is almost completely run by the communist Chinese government. They've officially become state-run. Apple, 100%. Google is now making the transition and announcing a merger and total worldwide censorship. They are now beta testing using me as the straw man, a demonized version of Alex Jones, to do that. This is happening. This is not like the other probes before that were meant to get you used to probes and censorship, thinking you would adapt to censorship by just putting up with it. Now this attack is thousands and thousands and thousands of times the magnitude of all previous attacks. This is a titrated dose, reverse psychological warfare operation using adapt and overcome, subversion, paradigm manipulation. In layman's terms, they are manipulating the fact that we adapt to being oppressed. We adapt to being pressed with the low dosages of oppression. Now when the megaton hits us of the total takeover, we try to adapt to the poison infusion instead of not knowing it's a lethal dose if we accept the dose. Total Internet of Things, integration, global social score, complete command and control system. It is the virtual reality AI weapon system now attacking the United States with traitors inside the major security agencies, blocking Trump's resistance of the program and attempting to stop us from removing the tentacles of the Chi-Com slash Big Tech banking combine emergency situation. I have been chosen for destruction because I brought you this information and have been battering, ramming it out as much as I can. They want to double use me as they always do in any complex system of mathematical deception, where every angle of my good is turned against us. So they take what I've said, being sincere, build me into an insincere person in the straw man. I'm a person that cares about life and children and is against these wars. And so they make me a herder of children. And then they build me into this lie to then set the distraction while they're actually censoring all of you to make a debate about Alex Jones. So even if I didn't sell out to them, they've now used me as an archetype to serve them by being the main distraction. I have now been captured by the enemy in the information warfare fulcrum and is being used against you. Only your full understanding of this key will break you free from this paradigm. I have given you the transmission. Now break free.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Thomas Jefferson. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Our medical grade USP ultramethylene blue, exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a 1 month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at thealexjonesstore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. Thealexjonesstore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
Unveiling the truth they don't want you to see. This is the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. And today I'm going to walk you through, again, some of the classic texts that admit everything that we're seeing roll out today. These classic texts will be then a demonstration, a proof that we're not conspiracy theorists, but in fact, we are conspiracy realists. We are espionage students. We are history buffs. We're not lunatics that just come up with stuff with no backing or basis. In fact, we're going to see as we walk through some of these key texts, some of which you've heard me talk about before and some you haven't. These key texts admit the technocratic, internationalist, globalist agenda that includes Zionism as well, as part of an overall strategy to bring about a new world order. This new world order is not capitalist or socialist Marxist in the classical sense.
it's a hybrid of all of these into a new type of system run by computers, supercomputers from centralized mega cities underneath giant continental unions. In order to get to that end goal, the establishment needs a specific type of currency that's one world and universal and controlled by a central hub. It needs a single world religion that thus props up the beast system, and it needs a centralized global state. So one world religion, one world currency, and one world government. Those are all the key plans that we can't forget that are the real overall plan of all of this. And we just saw this week, as I highlighted the other day, as I predicted for many, many years, I've been talking about the union between the Roman Catholic Church and Islam and other religions to create a supra mega perennialist religion for probably 20 years. And then beyond that, we've talked about Dune and the way that Dune, for example, last week or a few days ago, we talked about Dune predicts this convergence into a future world religion that combines Islam with Catholicism. And they have their own Bible in the Dune story called the Orange Catholic Bible. So we talked about that a couple days ago, but that's fiction. And of course, a lot of times fiction encodes and predicts through predictive programming, you could say, a lot of what comes about in reality. And there's a lot of reasons how and why it does that. Sometimes the authors are insiders. Sometimes they know very powerful people. Sometimes, like Philip K. Dick, they're in the circles of people in Silicon Valley, so he can write into his dystopian sci-fi classics what the elite have planned. Sometimes it's people who are in the British establishment, and they hear about what's going on, and they write books like Wanting Seed, Anthony Burgess, who wrote the novel about enforced homosexuality in the future dystopia, very close to what Huxley put in Brave New World, which is the idea that there's enforced well, basically you have to sleep with everybody. So it's illegal not to touch butts with anyone who requests it. And you're medicated if you disagree because something's wrong with you. Why would you not want to sleep with everyone? So this all becomes a mandated technocracy where you're controlled by your addictions and your passions. You're given Soma in Brave New World, which is a drug that makes you kind of lackadaisical, and you have this sort of drug trip experience. And in the religion of Brave New World, it's connected to a kind of orgy that mimics the Christian religious service, almost kind of like a new agey black mass where everybody's sort of just sort of having sex, but also taking a kind of quasi hallucinogenic drug. That's the religious service that you see in Brave New World. And that's where all the rainbow churches would like to take everybody in the future, as well as this new alliance that's forged between the Vatican and Islam now publicly, globally, in response supposedly to the evils of Donald Trump going to war in Iran. Now, I disagree with Donald Trump's war in Iran. However, that's a false choice. I don't have to choose the globalist socialist papacy uniting with Islam or the Zionist approach that Donald Trump has. What if I reject both of those? Because as an Orthodox Christian, I don't believe either of those approaches are correct. So there's other options that we can choose in the midst of false dialectics and false choices, false either ors. But when we want to talk about these books and how well laid out this is, there's so many of them that it's actually difficult to really pick the best or the worst or whatever, because so many of these writings of the elite over the last century, they actually have, each one of them kind of has unique angles and pieces that it brings to the table, puzzle pieces that it fits in with their overall picture. But if we were to rewind a long time ago, you heard me mention this a couple of days ago. There was a famous count named Count Kudenhove Kalergi, and he wrote a book called Practical Idealism. And you may have heard people say, this is the Kalergi plan. And this book was written in 1925. And the point of this book was that there has to be a European Union that would eventually erase every tribe and ethnic and, you could call it a European nation state group, right? So there won't be Scots people. There won't be Irish people. There won't be Britons. There won't be Italians. There won't be French. They will all be blended into a generic glob, a blob union, erasing all of their unique cultural distinctives under the banner of equality, egalitarianism, and freedom and unity. And he argues that this will be done through the, not just the EU, but that it will create the rise of a Jewish superclass. Now, that's his argument, not mine. So if you take issue with that, if you say, oh, that's an evil conspiracy theory, well, I mean, he says it clear as day within the first 30 or 40 pages. He talks about that. Now, you said, well, who cares what this guy says? Who is he? Well, this plan was presented to the elites of the British Empire, and they said, we like your plan. This is covered in Quigley's Anglo-American Establishment book, which is kind of a sequel to Tragedy and Hope. And in the Anglo-American Establishment, the elites of Britain said, this is the Rothschilds and the Fabians and the Milner elite. They said, we like your plan, Count. But we also like Lord Curtis's plan, so we're going to go with a blend of both of those. And Lord Curtis's plan was what he called the Commonwealth of God, which was a kind of rebranding of the British Empire to be a kind of a light Fabian socialist global order. That was the Commonwealth of God plan. And this is Count Kudenhove Kalergi's counter plan that also blends very well with that. So the next time somebody says, well, there's no evidence for that, it doesn't exist, you can point out the UN replacement migration documents that Alex has highlighted for 15 years, 10, 15 years. You can point out the banker Larry Summers, who said that it's time to erase, Peter Sutherland. Peter Sutherland, the European banker, said that the banking elite have already determined that it's time to erase the unique European people groups with mass migration and other techniques to essentially breed them out. So that's why there's a massive influx of Muslims into Europe. And similar strategies are used, of course, in the United States as well. And that's including in the last several years, more and more Muslims as well. We know that, for example, Max Blumenthal's book, Management of Savagery, talks about the billions of dollars that the Saudis alone have put into funding Islamic education centers and mosques in the United States, combined with the massive importation of people from Islamic countries. There is definitely a strategy to dilute and change the existing demographics and population. And that's not a conspiracy theory. It's a form of warfare, right? There's books that are out of Cornell University, that are out of the Army War College. Kelly Greenhalgh has a book called Weapons of Mass Migration. It's an academic text. And so it's not a conspiracy theory to talk about the use of people groups as demographic warfare. If you remember a few years ago, even Erdogan made this clear when he says, if you don't do what we want, we will flood your country with infinity migrants. And so he even threatened this as an open form of warfare, showing that demographic warfare is well known to political leaders, well known to generals and army commanders, because it's an ancient technique, it's an ancient strategy, as well as other types of non-kinetic techniques, fifth generational warfare, things that include cultural war, things that include flooding the country or the target area with extreme forms of vice, extreme forms of pornography. We know that this happened to the people in Palestine. In Gaza, they were flooded with hardcore porn by the IDF and the Mossad some years ago, and that's all publicly on record as a form of psychological warfare. You also have, of course, economic warfare. So all of these techniques are used, and it's important to point out that none of these are new. They're just sort of refined, and they're scientifically updated to be a mad scientist's insane, crazy dream. Now, a book that a friend of mine sent to me some years ago, right when the COVID psyop was let loose, is a book called Millennium. And Millennium is a collection of all of these sort of Barbara Marx Hubbard, Timothy Leary, Carl Rogers, Jonas Salk, Marilyn Ferguson, Willis Harmon type New World Order figures, associated typically with sort of the boomer counterculture revolution of the 1960s. But they had a huge impact on the changing of the landscape of American morals and thought. And these essays are all collected together in a book in 1981 that talks about essential and non-essential workers. Willis Harmon, who's a big, Stanford Research SRI guy who's written all types of globalist elite documents, one of which he had a huge role in was the Maxwell, Robert Maxwell published book, Changing Image as a Man, which we covered in studio with Alex when I got a hold of a hard copy. And that was, I think, a pretty definitive text, an elite textbook level text for grad students who would be going into the bureaucratic system. And that was used at a high level, in high level universities for international relations students that were graduating in the 1980s. This book also came out in the early 1980s. And Willis Harmon says that in the future, we're going to understand that there's extra people, and the extra people are going to be a class lower. So you thought that you were getting a new world order of egalitarianism and radical equalitarianism where everyone's equal. But no, there will be a strata. It's just that strata will be determined by the technocrats who decide who the essential and non-essential workers are. And of course, the non-essential workers are the extra people. You may recall David Attenborough, the famous wildlife BBC, Malthusian, who often talked about the extra people. What will we do with the extra people? Perhaps we shall have to get rid of them. He always said this in his documentaries. That's a term that the Malthusians use for all the people that they see as essentially the profane and the worthless. So Willis Harmon argues that in the post-industrial society of the future, when the technocracy comes in, you'll have a universal basic income that's a form of social credit that determines your social worth, and everything will be needs-based. There won't be this idea of merit and you pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and creating your own small business. It will all be essentially apportioned to you because you are part of a collective. And so austerity collectivism will come into vogue, and even perhaps tiny living. You notice that tiny living is being promoted everywhere by design. It's very fashionable, especially when there's a bad economy. So why not just work from home in the future? Yes, talks about working from home. 1981. And the idea would be that in this great technocratic future, the new ethic will be eco-based. So we'll base everything around what's good and bad for the environment, including how much population is allowed. And essentially that'll be decided by computers because we can't leave that to humans. They're subject to fallible emotions. So technocracy requires that in the future, the non-essential workers, their lifespans will be determined by how useful they are to the collective system and to Mother Earth. Social planning is the future, and all of society has moved and evolved from individual thinking in the West to collective thinking. So it's time to give up individuality for the good of the whole, the good of the collective. Now remember, this didn't go away just because Trump got elected. The overall technocratic agenda, just because people aren't talking about it or because people think, oh, we've won, trust the plan. No, no, no. All of this continues to march on. Just look at all the technocrats who are pushing for all of the worst things at Bilderberg just last week. All the same technocratic agenda that everybody thought, oh, well, forget about it. You know, Trump's elected. Who cares? It's all good. Now we won. We're taking over. None of that changed. In fact, it was all reiterated, and perhaps they got more done because people thought, oh, well, we've actually won, so there's no concern. We don't have to worry about it anymore. The other chapters in this book are relevant, but not super relevant for what we're going to be talking about today. But you do have figures like Timothy Leary talking about a kind of a new satanic era of the future that would be based around transhumanism. And he himself was an explicit Satanist. He said he was, quote, carrying on the work of Aleister Crowley. And so to give all the boomers LSD was actually a means of enlightening them and waking them up from being essentially corporate 1950s creations. And now in the future, he says, transhumanism, genetic modification, cloning, and the return of Gaia will be the future world that we go into. If you go to places in California, like Topanga Canyon or wherever you find like kind of Instagram yoga chick new age communities, it's all boomers that run those that come out of the Tim Leary mindset. And it's funny to see the way that they think this is going to come about. Like everybody sort of, they think that you're going to set up this sort of like massively depopulated tribal return to primitivism setting, which is just so unrealistic given the nature of the global economy, how integrated it is with technology. This idea that you're going to have some sort of like indigenous tribal setting where, I don't know, really cool acid dropping boomers are going to be alive and leading everybody into this golden aeon. It's really preposterous, but it's very useful for social engineering and for convincing people that you can create this kind of a new world just out of thin air, right? Not a whole lot of difference between that and the absurd idealism of a classical Marxist, that we'll just get all the workers to rise up and then everybody will be fair and everything will be equal and we'll just divide everything up and it'll be perfect equality. Again, to go back to some of the classics so you don't forget, David Rockefeller, who probably one of the most powerful men in the history of the United States, created essentially the Council on Foreign Relations, created the Trilateral Commission out of that, helped to create the Bilderberg Group, essentially donated the land for the United Nations, had a huge role in the creation of the OSS and the CIA. I mean, on and on and on. You can't get away from JP Morgan Chase and Chase Bank and Standard Oil and all of the tremendous industrial magnate, oligarch, barren power that the Rockefeller family has had. You really can't get away from that. But maybe they aren't conspiratorial. Maybe we're just making this up. Maybe it's all just for the good of the country and they're very nice people. Well, in the photos, which we always overlook the photos, you'll find him here gleefully meeting with Chinese communist leaders. And so he preceded Nixon. Here's, I think, Nixon down here with Kissinger, when he went to China. But before that, David Rockefeller prepared the way for Nixon to do that by going and setting up Chase Bank as the first bank in communist China. And that's why, by the way, here he is praising Nelson Mandela, meeting with and praising Nelson Mandela. Here he is at NAFTA, the push for NAFTA. So you'll find the Rockefellers are pretty much at the heart of everything, including the erection of the first major bank in Red China. And they brag about this. And of course, Dave Rockefeller has a whole section in here, by the way, about his intelligence work, how he came out of being an intelligence operative and how that's really what prepared him for the future global oligarchical role that he gladly accepted. And we can't forget the classic chapter where he says that he is a proud internationalist and that people accuse him of wanting to set up a world government and being a globalist. And he says, I proudly accept that mantle. I'm absolutely ecstatic, in fact, about creating a global government. And the conspiracy theorists are correct. He actually says that. He says, yes, they are correct. I am trying to do that. Here is a whole section where he brags about creating, together with other members of the European elite, including members of the SS, Bilderberg. He says, yeah, of course, I helped create Bilderberg. I'm very proud of that. He says, it doesn't do as much as I'd hoped, but yeah, I had a huge role in creating that with Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, and that's what our technocratic oligarchical elite is all about. He says, I worked with Etienne d'Avignon and a bunch of other oligarchs to help create the Bilderberg Group. And he says, our goal has always been and continues to be, this is pages 416 and 17, the erection of a new world economic order. And I worked together with Zbigniew Brzezinski, and essentially he says our puppet, Jimmy Carter, played a huge role in this. He says that there was a brief period where Ronald Reagan thought that he would challenge the Trilateral Commission and the CFR. And he says, Ronald Reagan, he, in very coded language, he says, Ronald Reagan figured out that maybe that wasn't the best idea to challenge the CFR and the Trilateral. Maybe he's saying that gunshot might have had something to do with that, but he says, if you want to understand how I learned all of this, this is why I constantly harp on the espionage and the spy angle to all this stuff to all you guys, which I know I get people in the comments, oh, this is boring. Who cares? Boring. Well, you're just proudly touting your own ignorance, because you may think it's boring, but this is the people who rule over you. This is the people who are force feeding you the garbage physically and culturally that you eat and take into your body and into your mind. David Rockefeller says the construction of this order, all of this, he says, is because I was an intelligence officer. I learned that my effectiveness depended upon my ability to develop networks with reliable information and influence. So he attributes his skill set to his intelligence work. Now, who did he recruit in 1990 to be another key member of the CFR to help him do what he was up to? Oh, Jeffrey Epstein. Remember in the Bannon interview, the most notorious organized crime international fixer, human trafficker, PDF blackmailer person of recent note in the last several decades was a legate, David Rockefeller, as Epstein himself bragged, not just being CFR, but also being at the Trilateral Commission. So what's the goal of these people? Well, it turns out the guy that they created the Trilateral Commission for, Zbigniew Brzezinski, wrote a book in 1970 called Between Two Ages, and he tells us everything about what the goal of the CFR and the Trilateral Commission and people like Jeffrey Epstein are ultimately up to. And it's not just sex ops and blackmail and honey traps and human trafficking. It's not just that. It's not even just money laundering. It's much bigger than that. It's a technocratic global agenda. This is Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis, and you're watching The Alex Jones Show, fourth hour. Don't go anywhere, because we've got several more amazing insights and admissions from the elite.
If you suffer from low energy, if you're not feeling the energy that you used to feel in your younger years, you should try this product and see if it makes a difference for you, because there are many causes of lack of energy, but one of them can be a lack of cellular energy support through pre-methylated nutritional supplements like this that can help you. You can go buy a bottle of vitamins at any store, you know, any Walmart, anywhere that's got cheap B12, which is cyanocobalamin, or the cheap B vitamins, or the cheap minerals like calcium carbonate, which is ground up limestone, you know. Alex Jones doesn't use the cheap low-end versions of these products. And I know this as a nutritionist, as a food scientist. I look at Alex's labels and I'm like, yes, these are the high-end ingredients that I would be using in my own formulations. So really, I'm always impressed with what the Alex Jones store is doing with their product line. So check it out. TheAlexJonesStore.com, Ultramethylene Red.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling 3 emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. And I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and 2 others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get 1 or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support. Our medical-grade USP Ultramethylene Blue, exclusively at TheAlexJonesStore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a 1-month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it, because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your Ultramethylene Blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at TheAlexJonesStore.com and it funds your operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. TheAlexJonesStore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
I've been in the oil field for for as long as I've been an Info Warrior, 18 years. And Texan, born and raised, so I know, like, knives, like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, I mean, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm, like, horrible with equipment. I'm, like, very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows there's a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80 or selling for like $40. We'll be right back.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. My guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. I want to remind you that I am live in Nashville in person debating Chase Geyser and one of his friends at a public debate. You can get tickets to that still. It is posted on my Instagram, and we'll be debating the topic of Freemasonry, and the tickets are almost sold out. So if you want to get access to that, be sure and get your ticket right now. The question is a Christian able to be a Freemason? Is it something that's antithetical to Christianity, or can they work together? Are they somehow harmonizable? So that's going to be a fun debate tomorrow night. And of course, if you want my books, yes, I will have a book table, and you can come get signed copies of Esoteric Hollywood 1, 2, and 3 and some of my other books as well. So we're talking about the admitted plans of the elite in their texts, some of which I've covered as classics and some of which I've got over here that are pretty new that you may not have seen or heard of. But of course, Brzezinski, as we said, was one of these key figures who the Trilateral Commission was created for. And that's also something that your buddy Epstein was involved in there as David Rockefeller and Lord Rothschild's legate between two ages describes the future world. This is written in 1970, where Skynet will become a reality. He doesn't call it Skynet, but he says that computers will be interlinked with all the satellite networks, and they will be able to use genetic modification and future perhaps nanotechnologies to mutate man and turn man into something other than what he is. And that's within the first few pages. He immediately talks about this genetic modification of man and the future Skynet world order that we're going into. And you may have heard this because most people refer to this book when they want to talk about geoengineering and weather control, because he talked about it in a footnote back in 1970 that, of course, it's a reality. And there's Brzezinski right there saying the future will be future warfare, including geoengineering and weather war, something that even still people say doesn't exist. And if you talk about it, you are a crazy conspiracy theorist. He goes on to talk about the important role that religion will play in the future world order, and that things like Vatican II are preparing the way for the emergence of a new synthesis of all the world religions into something else, some new monstrosity. He doesn't call it a monstrosity, but I'm calling it a monstrosity. But what about all of this esoteric, hermetic, occult stuff that's everywhere in the last, well, you could say since the 1960s with the counterculture revolution of the boomers? Where did we get all this yoga everywhere, the yoga chicks and the importation of all of these Far Eastern ideas and Tibetan Buddhism? And you could say, well, Hollywood had a key role in it. Yeah. But who was one of the main people whose ideas influenced millions and millions of people, including many of the elite? Well, it's a woman named Helena Blavatsky. Her esoteric system that she created was very influential on the United Nations and the early promoters of the Lucis Trust, which is now what used to be called the Lucifer Trust Publishing Company, which publishes the books by Alice Bailey, Annie Besant, and of course, Madame Blavatsky herself, who was thought for many, many years, and I think she probably was, to be a British agent or perhaps a socialist. Well, she was a Fabian socialist, admittedly. In fact, I think Gandhi attended her funeral. Gandhi was a Fabian socialist, and I think You may have heard of Aleister Crowley. He was a huge fan of Madame Blavatsky as well. In fact, he told his devotees to read the works of Blavatsky. So she has a work called The Secret Doctrine. And in this, she says that the future religion of the new aeon, of the new age that's coming, she's really the real central figure behind the new age and the syncretist idea of all the religions coming together in terms of theosophy, which is her occult system. She said that new religion is one that will shift away from the dogmatism of a kind of patriarchal religion of God the Father or anything like that. And it's, she says, and I can't believe I found this. I think I bought this book in Austin. So we found this at an Austin bookstore in, I think, their first edition. So they're really expensive. But I got Isis Unveiled 1 and 2 first edition copies. So this is Blavatsky's priestesses of Isis. That's the religion of the future that will replace Christianity, because we need a more feminine-centric religion that will displace the logic and the reasoning and the warfare and the dominance that masculine energies possess. Instead, it will be a harmony, synthesis, peace, feminine religion embodied in the figure of Isis. And I can't prove this, but I think Dr. John Coleman in his conspiracy books has a pretty convincing thesis that they had planned many decades ago to create pop stars. And I'm talking about the Lady Gagas, the Beyoncés, the Madonnas, the Katy Perrys, the Billie Eilishes, all of these figures that would become essentially embodiments of Isis, because they want to instantiate and incarnate a new religion based around the feminine principle that replaces what they call phallogocentrism, or the phallic logos reasoning centric religion of Christianity, of the Bible, etc. And to do that, you need an ideology of religion that is something new, but also is seen and perceived as peaceful and harmonious and in tune with nature and all this fake and gay nonsense, which is a cloak for a fake religion created by the elite to dupe everybody into some sort of delusion, a mass delusion that the real God is nature itself, or Isis, right? Because nature, you could say, is kind of a passive. I mean, there's a generative principle, you could say, of masculine and feminine in nature. And of course, that will be a big part of the debate tomorrow night when I debate the two Freemasons on whether it's a consistent Christian society or whether it's absolutely antithetical to Christianity. The religion of the worship of nature is essentially what we're talking about. And that's what Blavatsky talks about. She says that Isis Unveiled is the revealing of what was prior to now hidden, meaning we had to keep our secret society teachings in the background until the time was right, when we've gained enough power through, she says, education. In fact, she says that kindergarten, she wrote an article like 100 plus years ago for the Scottish Rite magazine, or she was at least quoted in the Scottish Rite magazine 100 plus years ago, saying that elementary school and education would be the key means by which the new age, the religion of the new age, would be inculcated and indoctrinated and brought about by the time that we're living in now. So essentially she was predicting a near future revelation of the religion and worship of Isis, the goddess, under the guise of anything like New Age, or it doesn't have, we don't have to all explicitly be walking into a temple that's called the Temple of Isis when we already have essentially churches that are flying the rainbow flags. That's the equivalent of Isis Unveiled, right? Because we're going to a kind of pagan worship, a kind of temple prostitution religion, like my wife Jamie has talked about in a lot of her videos. In fact, the last time she was on here on the fourth hour, we covered Babylon, mystery religion, and the harlot. And we went to the ancient temple prostitution cults of the ancient world and saw that that's exactly what this is and what they want to bring back. So Blavatsky's Fabian socialism is also intimately tied to her new age revolution of promoting yoga, Eastern meditation techniques, trance, you say anything like that, transcendental meditation, it all kind of has the same, it flows from the same sort of branch, or grows out of the same branch of her version of the secret doctrine, which is this weird mix of everything from Eastern tantric practices to yoga to Neoplatonism to ritual magic. All of those things play a role in her concocted, made-up religion. And it is absolutely 100% made up. She was not supposedly discovering, you know, some sort of hidden arcane thing. She just sort of crafted together a system. And one of the reasons Crowley liked her, I think, was because she was successful at doing that. And his cult, for example, when you graduate the higher levels, you then go on to create your religion. So it's actually a school for learning how to create a cult. And that's exactly what Blavatsky did. Now, if you doubt that that's the case, consider another member of the Fabian Socialists, this group that she was a part of that was really run by Lord Rothschild and Lord Milner and other people in these elite circles over 100 years ago of the British Empire. Note that we're still living through the ideas that they put forward, was the famous figure H.G. Wells. And we've covered H.G. Wells many, many, many times. But I think I've only mentioned this book once on the Fourth Hour, and I'm sure everyone's forgotten it. And I would venture to say that probably no one, maybe a handful of people in the audience, have actually read it, because H.G. Wells wrote a lesser-known book. I can't believe we got a hold of this old copy, too. This is probably a 100-years-old copy. 1917, actually. I have a 1917 copy of God, the Invisible King, by H.G. Wells. And H.G. Wells is talking about, as a high-level Freemason, high-level socialist, high-level Fabian socialist explicitly, what the religion of the future would be. Now, you might think, well, H.G. Wells, if he was like a Marxist socialist, he was an atheist, right? So he would say that the future religion is just science and, you know, something like that. Or should I say science? But he doesn't say that. In fact, he says, no, there will be a religion of the future. It's just not going to be the religion of Western gods or Christianity or anything like that. He says, we will have a figure that we look to as our archetype or as our sort of deity. He doesn't say he actually thinks it's a real deity or not. He just kind of leaves that ambiguous. He says, it's going to be Lucifer. Yes, Lucifer. The god of H.G. Wells is the Promethean figure that the future will worship, the god Lucifer. And that will be the age or the aeon that the Fabian socialist technocrats bring in, which will be an age of total one world government, one world religion, one world currency. And it includes massive depopulation for the good of the earth. And so if you're going to argue for the good of the earth, then you need some kind of earth-based religion or some sort of pantheistic type of religion. And that's exactly what her religion is all about. And that's, I think, why you see the pop stars, whether they know it or not, they don't have to know about Blavatsky and all this stuff. They have agents and handlers that essentially tell them what they're up to and what they're supposed to do because they're corporate products that are owned, but they're corporate products that are pushing an overall agenda, an occult agenda that goes beyond just making money or MKUltra or blackmail. None of that stuff is the end goal. The end goal is the erection of what H.G. Wells called the Luciferian era. And again, all of these books, they all say the same thing. Now, they're not all talking about the same topic, right? So if we read, Soldiers of Reason by Alex Avea, and Alex Jones did a lengthy interview some years back with Alex Avea. And I remember when he put that, big long interview out, I went and bought this book and read the whole book, which is the history of the Rand Corporation. And Alex Avea wrote this as one of the few people who was allowed inside Rand Corporation to, read and do an official book from the basis of their own texts and documents. So it's not a conspiracy book. You have to understand that. And essentially what he admits is that the Rand Corporation is one of the premier think tanks that really designed the 20th century and the 21st century that we're going into. So everything from Obamacare to American education system being dumbing down of people to the Iraq war to, the tax system to, you think of it, mutually assured destruction, the Cold War. That was all thought out by the brainiacs and essentially the neocons, you could say, at the Rand Corporation. People like Alfred Wolfstetter and Herman Kahn, also figures like Edward Teller, who were very instrumental in the creation of geoengineering. They were all working together on these projects that would eventually lead to the idea of how we would construct this specific world order. We've covered Kessler before many times, but we can't forget the importance of The Ghost in the Machine by Kessler, who was given the Order of the British Empire. He was supposedly a Hungarian Marxist who became somehow Order of the British Empire. A lot of Marxists ended up Order of the British Empire. And I think he committed suicide together with his wife, right? So this is a very bizarre figure. But he was very liked by the Royal Society establishment elite. Again, these are the same people that are BFF with Jimmy Savile and Jeffrey Epstein. So this is telling you the type of people we're talking about. Not surprising that they would unalive themselves. But people forget that Kessler was very influential amongst these elites and said at the end of his book that we need to drug the food and the water, and we need to dumb people down, and we need to kill most people, because that's the only thing that's good for Earth and for the progression of evolution. See, people treat evolution as a religion. That's their religion. And he says that all the techniques that the CIA applied in terms of mind control will have to be used on a mass scale. So all that MKUltra stuff is really about massive social engineering. He says explicitly, there's the entire last chapter. You don't have to read this whole book. Just go read the last chapter, and it's everything that you hear all of us talking about. Now, he wrote this book in 1967, right? And this was a Royal Society produced text. So this tells you what the Royal Society's attitude and inner core beliefs are. Again, people find this hard to believe, but nobody goes and reads the actual text. That's what we do on my channel, and we've lectured through probably 70 of these over the last decade. No one else does this. No one else has the receipts like I do. And again, I'm not trying to say that I give proper credence to Alex, because Alex is the one that mentioned these books over the years. He was aware of this way before I was. But I went and got all the books and more, and went way deep into all of them, reading all of them, annotating all of them, doing lectures on all of them for the last 10 years. And yet my YouTube channel is still only at 200,000 subscribers. I would ask you, please, if you want this type of information, this type of data, if you want to get really deep into it, we have a lot of fun on my channel too, go subscribe to my channel, Jay Dyer, on YouTube. I'm also on X and on Rumble as well. So be sure and click on all of those, Instagram, TikTok, you name it. Follow me, especially at X, because I've been multi-streaming now to X and all the different websites. But let's not forget the Jonas Salk. Remember Jonas Salk? Jonas Salk was the developer of today's so-called inoculation science that we have. And you might think, oh, well, if he cured polio and he did all these great things, right? Well, in 1972, and he's got another book he wrote too that I have that says the same stuff. He wrote a book called Survival of the Wisest. Now, what do you think he means by the wisest? He means the scientific priest class and the people with all the money. That's the wisest people. In other words, the wisest people are the people who have the radical depopulation worldview. In fact, he even says that for the good of the survival of the human race, meaning the elite, they're going to have to even experiment in mass on pregnant women. And he says, we can do that through stabbies. It's amazing to me that you can have books like this written, and they've been out in the public domain for decades, admitting that they want to and will experiment on children, experiment on the public, creating mutations. All of this should be like Nuremberg level, like illegality, right? Isn't this all just crimes against humanity? And yet the people who advocate for crimes against humanity are the ones that are given the awards for greatest humans or whatever these fake and gay awards are. That's all psyops anyway, to give all these disgusting people these awards. But we also have books like Game of Nations, written by Miles Copeland, relative of Stuart Copeland, right? You probably heard of The Police, people like Stuart Copeland. Well, Miles Copeland was a high-level CIA operative, and he was stationed primarily in the Middle East. He spent time in Egypt. He spent time in Syria. And this book is fascinating because it really shows how the CIA does what it does and why it does what it does. Under the guise of consulting, they're really there to transition nation states into the long-term positions that the CIA, working at the behest of the CFR and the Trilateral Commission, wants to see those nations transition into. So, for example, there's entire chapters in the book, which we lectured this book 10 years ago on my channel. There's chapters where he says, of course we use terrorists. Of course we arm radical Muslims. Yeah, duh. Who doesn't know that? Of course we use false flag events. It's a classic technique. Just out of hand, just says it. Yeah, absolutely. That's our strategy. But I think the most enlightening part of the book is his reading list at the back, which we've talked about many times, because a lot of people, again, they don't go into the text and look at the recommended reading, and they don't want to see the big picture. We're always focused on the here and the now. But Miles Copeland, back in, I think he wrote this book in the late 1960s, he says, you know, if you want to understand what the CIA's long-term goals are, he says, read the CFR's reports, read the Rand Corporation's reports, and he says, read the writings of Bertrand Russell. Oh, that's all the stuff that I've been lecturing through, isn't it? So who else is out here saying this? Nobody. I mean, except for Alex and a handful of people, right? Who else is telling you, well, how about read some CIA books? Well, the CIA said in the 1960s, we're depopulating all these places, and that's why we are doing these regime change operations. Not in the immediate, but the long-term goal, he says, for Egypt is to do whatever we need to do in Egypt for 50, 100 years down the road, getting the population down. That's what he says. He says, ultimately, the Rand Corporation has written many white papers on how eventually to create a technocracy in all of these countries. So in other words, you got to regime change to get the country to where it's sufficiently industrialized to where you can then have the technocracy that gets the population down. It's amazing how candid they are in all these books. You would be surprised. And that's why we do that on my channel, is that we lecture through these, as well as many other things. We do debates. We do comedic stuff. More recently, though, we're covering another Council on Foreign Relations member's book, Burton Hirsch. He wrote a book called The Old Boys, which is the history of the OSS and the CIA and the American oligarchical elite that run those organizations. So here's a person from the establishment writing a book about the history of the establishment, telling you how they do it. And yet we still have people who say that it's all a conspiracy theory. It's not real. It doesn't exist. But I suspect that the reason, for example, that I can't get any Roman Catholic academics to come debate me on the history of the papacy in the last couple centuries from a geopolitical perspective is because none of them actually read these books. You have people like Trent Horn, who goes on YouTube making videos downplaying the role of Epstein and ignoring the different connections that he has to the Vatican beyond just one email, and ignoring other high-profile super predators and occultists like Jimmy Savile, who were given the papal knighthood award by John Paul II, a supposed saint. All of that's downplayed and ignored, and Roman Catholics will not debate in a public level the geopolitical entanglements, which I think absolutely explain the actions of the papacy in the last century far better than the supposed infallible charism of Peter. Again, Trent Horn won't debate me or anyone else on the powerfully necessary topic of Vatican II's statements about Islam and pagan religions and how they all work together in the plan of salvation. They won't debate any of that because they know that it's the death knell of their position. But they will go talk to Ben Shapiro or people from the Daily Wire about ridiculous topics. But note that none of these people will actually come and debate at a formal level these kill shots. Wonder why that is. Well, we know why that is. But beyond that, I think it's important to say that the goal was also explained by one of the top technocrats that you've all heard of. Of course, Alex has been talking about Ray. I first heard about Ray Kurzweil from Alex probably 20 years ago, maybe more, and from Jason Burmes, probably 15, 20 years ago. And, you know, he wrote this famous book called The Singularity is Near. And this is important because we're at this stage right now where the technocracy is literally rolling out. They don't necessarily have all the infrastructure everywhere in the world to have the technocracy. But I think the key places in the world where there might be significant opposition is precisely where they are beginning to roll it out. So particularly in the West, and particularly through means that would eventually, I think, lock down free speech. We just saw last week Bilderberg talking about AI, talking about Palantir-type technology, people from Palantir there at Bilderberg, with the idea of eventually creating, and Kurzweil wrote these books, you know, 20, 25, 30 years ago, rolling out the technocracy and what was coming by design. So that's the real goal. That's the real plan. And if you want to read about that, you can go to jaysanalysis.com and you can get my new book, Esther Hollywood 3, where I discuss all of this in detail. Sign copies in the shop. Be sure and follow Alex and support Alex in the store, the InfoWars, at the Alex Jones store.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra methylene blue.
I know. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Ultra methylene blue. I mean, this is just bonker town. I just can't shut up about it. Ultra methylene blue. I just can't shut up about it. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
Hey, the Alex Jones app, AJN Live, is now the number one app in the world. That's right, you heard me. We're number one. And this is pissing off the Democrats in the deep state big time. They're doing everything they can to shut us down, and now here we are dominating the Apple Store.
Smells like victory.
We just launched the app less than 2 days ago, and we're already the number one news app in the world. And we'd like to keep it that way, so if you haven't done so yet, now's your chance. Go to alexjonesapp.com and download the app and tell the globalists to go f*** themselves.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.